easily the most confusing movie of the year, and Wonder Woman 1984 came out.
That's right.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Hi there.
For Music Video Sins, Barrett Scher.
Yay! There!
And also from The Things from TV Sins, Aaron Dicer.
The Things.
Heidely ho, Cinerinos.
Yeah. Yes. Today is going to be another chapter of the best of the years we've been alive. It's 2020.
Wow. 45 years, Chris, that we've covered in this,
right.
This whole thing now.
We have. We have indeed, and 2020 gonna be a little different from most years we've done this. We all know this. The thing is, Aaron, you're gonna have to help me out with this one.
Sure.
Some of the movies, we're not gonna get to some of the movies that were nominated for Oscars this year because we are considering them 2021 movies.
Correct.
So which ones will people not be hearing about that fit the 2021? Do you know that?
Yeah, the main ones you're going to be missing are Judas and the Black Messiah, which just got a bunch of Oscar noms, mm-hmm. and is great and worth those Oscar noms, and you know, we can talk about it next year. Mm-hmm. Malcolm and Marie,
yep.
Is a 2021 movie. And then the other big one is probably United States versus Billie Holiday,
okay.
Which yep. I'm not sure if you guys have seen, but that did get a couple noms, mm-hmm. As well. And there may be one or two others that we're missing, but for the most part, most of them actually did get themselves out in the calendar year 2020. Mm-hmm. So we will be talking about a lot of the Oscar noms from this year.
Yeah. And the only reason we're doing that, like typically the Oscars would be all about the calendar year, but they aren't this year because pandemic and because movies were coming in late with you know, their nomination process, sending them out to critics and sending them out to the Academy and everything. So this year is going to be a little different, and you know, this is going to be a crazy, like a crazy year as far as big releases. Like there's hardly any.
Yeah, there's going to be three Marvel movies in 2021, but none in 2020, right?
Right. So this is going to be very like non-box office heavy, and I don't know if this was a big huge boon for independent film or those medium films that we you know sometimes, I don't know, kind of ignore or whatever. Do we really know how many of these movies got watched a lot over the past year? We don't really have any numbers to point to and say, yeah, this was a huge hit. So let's start it off. This is going to be a little bit all over the place, but I'm going to start off with the one that got the most nominations. Let's go with Mank. David Fincher's movie about Herman Mankiewicz and Gary Oldman playing someone who's way younger than him, but
isn't he like 44 in this?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, which makes the friendship between he and Marion Davies like really like wow, they were the same age and now they're like got a 40-year gap. Yeah. This came on Netflix and this was really good. I was surprised about the 10 nominations though.
Yep.
Well, the nomination thing has a lot to do with just how interesting every choice they made in this movie was, from the sound to the visuals to the costuming to the, you know, he really shot this and produced it as if he were in era, mm-hmm. you know, so all the sound equipment he used was in era sound equipment, you know, the video, that kind of stuff he digitized to make look like that, mm-hmm. or, you know, tried to shoot on that stuff. So from the cuts, the scene cuts, like everything was done as if they could have done it in the era. So I think all the different artistic nominations were a guarantee for this movie. Then the fact that Siegfried and Oldman both got nominated as well in the acting, I think, you know, it just added up.
It's a movie about making movies, man. Every goddamn time.
They like those.
It's a movie about making movies. This is a very good movie. I just finished it, by the way, right before we started recording. This is a very, very good movie. Doesn't look like a Fincher movie at all. It has really good moments, has really good dialogue. I think if it wasn't about making movies, I don't think it would have a chance. I don't think it would come anywhere close to sniffing Oscar's job.
I don't know. The Fincher thing always gives it a chance, right? Like, I mean, he's never won a Best Director, though, has he? I don't think he has. Nope. There's several directors of that generation.
Alien 3. No, there was a point. I don't think he was in any serious consideration. I guess Social Network was pretty close for him, but that's another, man, The King's Speech really just like robbed everything, didn't it? Just robbed us of all joy that there was in the world, The King's Speech. I think that was the same year, right? 2010.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so.
I think it was. Yeah. I remembered seeing David Fincher up for awards before, and he just never has won. It's like, it's one of those weird ones where you see, like, for years you'll see Scorsese out there in the audience and he's like nominated and you're like, oh, there's a guy who's got 100 of these, right? No, none. and that year they just somehow just don't give him another award, you know. Curious Case of Benjamin Button was another one that I thought there was even though nobody really likes that movie, I don't think. That was another one that he was up, you know, like, I think he was up for, but no, he's never won.
Yeah.
I really like Amanda Seyfried in this movie. Ever since seeing First Reformed, I've really started to appreciate what she's bringing to the table. She's become a really, really good actor over the years. She was always like decently good, but like never to the level that we've been seeing now and everything. And so I was really happy to see that she got nominated in this. And Mank's got a lot of it's kind of like cool messages in there, mm-hmm. especially with the Mank friend who's making those movies for the studio that are politically motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't think there's anything to it. It's just, oh, this is my gateway into Hollywood. I'll make these movies. And then nobody's going to pay attention to these as anything serious. And of course people take those things seriously. Mm-hmm. So I really liked stuff like that in Mank, and it was real, really well shot, really well done.
Yeah.
This is the one, like, his father wrote this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like 20, 30 father. Years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah. So, all right, on to, let's go on to some of the other ones that have a decent amount of nominations. The Trial of the Chicago 7.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Are you in the same boat as I am, Jeremy, on this one?
I don't know. I didn't like this movie.
No, what? I didn't either. I liked it okay.
Yeah.
But... Yeah. I wasn't a big, huge fan of it. And now I've started seeing historians really down on it too.
Oh, I haven't gotten there yet.
So I don't know this is the problem with Twitter sometimes, is like there's been this internal conversation about a movie that you're not privy to. And then they start talking about how they hate a movie and you're like, why do you hate the movie? Is it because of the historical problems with it? Or is it because you just don't like the way the movie is made? I like this okay. I'm not a big fan of it.
Yeah, I think it was extremely well acted. There was a disconnect for me, I think, in the topic and the era against the way he chose to shoot the movie. I felt like the visuals were very glossy, almost TV like at times. And I don't know, maybe I'm just weird. I felt like, whereas like Black Klansman, not that it's the same film, but in terms of era, there was a slight grittiness to the way that was shot, where I felt like I was in that time, and it felt more like this was people play acting, and maybe that was the goal. I don't know. I do want to stress, I thought the acting was great. I just it didn't grab me, and when people started raving, I was like, interesting. So there you go.
Yeah.
What do you think, Aaron?
I really like Trial of the Chicago 7, but I am a sucker for big speeches, fun moment, like all the stuff in the character work in this movie is, you know, kind of right up my alley. So I did really enjoy it. I think for me, it's come to be a lesser of the nominees just because it seems so, this is weird to say, but it seems so shallow compared to the other. Like, there's just something very on the surface about this movie. And maybe part of that is even Judas and the Black Messiah, which we're not talking about, covering one of the characters in this movie in such intricate depth.
I'm just like,
everything here is just kind of brushed on. Now, do I enjoy the experience? Yes, very much so. I really enjoy the experience. But how do you boil down a trial that lasted that long, you know, to a feature length film without making it a little surface level, you know, without just kind of, you know, brushing at the character strokes in a way. But that's what movies do. So, like, I don't hold it against it too much. That's what movies do. And I had a good time and I've watched it a few times and I've enjoyed it every time. And, you know, there's something about that. So it's definitely not bad. It's very much one of my favorites of the year. But there is something about it that doesn't feel quite as, you know, top notch to me as some of the others of the year. So, yeah.
Yeah. There's something about, I like Aaron Sorkin a lot. But yeah. There's something about this movie where he's gone overboard on some of the, look at how smart I am. And look at, you know, like some of the dialogue in this movie is like, fuck you, dude. You know,
but some of it's great. Yeah. Some of it, like that whole allow me to be the second, like I laughed so hard at that part. Like there are just those moments where it's just like, that's brilliant.
The Michael
that's
Keaton
fun.
Line. God.
Yes.
Damn.
The Keaton stuff is great.
Yeah.
That's
when he needs to find some courage, just find some. And then he makes that speech about, you know, how I'm doing this in front of them just as a fuck you. And then he looks over and he goes, found some.
So good. Yeah. I love this movie. I love it. I love it.
Tell us how much you love this movie, Barrett.
See, I think that I think they did get into the message that Sorkin wanted to get across. Now,
correct. I think that's right.
I agree that you could have gone into the whole Bobby Seale stuff way more. You could have gone into the Abbie Hoffman stuff way more. You could have gone into the Eddie Redmayne stuff more. I always want to call him Tom Hagen, but it's Tom Hayden, I think. Mm-hmm. Tom Hagen is the consigliere to the Godfather. I think the trial itself is what he wanted to focus on, the ridiculousness of the judge, the absurdity of Chicago politics, of which I'm familiar, and then also getting in all these characters. Now, and I think the star of the show, despite how great Sacha Baron Cohen is Mark Rylance, man. Mark Rylance is fucking phenomenal in this movie, and he's the glue for everything. He's hard on Eddie Redmayne's character when he needs to be. He's hard on the judge when he needs to be. And then he backs off, even though it's blatantly unfair at a lot of times. And then he is resolute in his decision to, his non-decision to represent Bobby Seale, because it's not his business. And I think he is the moral compass of this entire movie. He's the moral compass of this entire story. He plays it a little bit too much like the guy in Ready Player One.
Oh.
Anorak or whatever the fuck it is. But I think he's brilliant, and I think the movie is brilliant. I think the dialogue is brilliant. Yes, Aaron Sorkin can always trim off about 10, 12 minutes from anything he directs, which is at this point two movies. But
not a big fan of editing.
I it didn't bother me nearly as much here as it did in Molly's Game.
Well, and that's the thing, as I agree with you. I think he had Better editing this time. And maybe he has learned between the two, and the next one will be the perfect length. I don't know. One of the things I always try and do as a writer, which sounds like I hate myself, is try to cut something that I really, really like.
Yeah.
Just because I think you have to do that, or you're being self-indulgent. And anyway, I didn't hate it. Obviously Barrett loved it and is going to vote for it number one with a bullet.
I do have a question. Is Sacha Baron Cohen the right nomination for this movie acting wise? I feel like you mentioned Mark Rylance. I think that's a better nomination for me, but I, for some reason, everything just kind of coalesced around Sasha.
I think he was the most ostentatious and the most eloquent. I think Abbie Hoffman as a character is going to steal the show every time.
Yeah,
I guess if you get a talented person playing a talented person, especially against any type that you've ever seen Sacha Baron Cohen play, I think it's a lock. And I think he's
fantastic. he has the big moment too on the stand. Yeah, no, I can see that.
It's also something that Hollywood likes to do with people who have two movies in one year that have that kind of visibility. It seems like they always get nominated for one or the other. I imagine there was some people who wanted to nominate him for Borat itself, but didn't. But the fact that, you know, the Trial of Chicago 7 was another great option for them. They could, it was almost like putting Borat votes into that as well. We're going to move on to Aaron, is this the movie that is the front runner for Best Picture, Nomadland?
I think so. Although with what has been going on with the Academy, both in how it's been adding members and in the results over the last few years, Best Picture has become much more unpredictable.
Agreed.
And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
But Nomadland is, I believe, the leader at the moment in the club,
which means Tenet will get it, right?
Yes.
Well, considering that's not nominated, something probably not.
It's only a matter of time before a non-nominated movie wins.
There'll be a mystery nominee.
There you go.
People will vote for the mystery nominee, not knowing what
it
is. Was.
Wonder Woman 1984 wins.
What? Fuck? Nomadland is another movie I really liked, but I was a little it's just not my movie.
It's just not my movie.
I get that.
Now we're on opposite sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I know you're not ragging on it.
No.
This one got me. Not in as strong a way as Roma, but in similar ways. In that it had me thinking about my own infinitesimally small place in this world and the victories and tragedies of people all around me that I take for granted, or in this case, don't even know they exist. Not only the nomads, but these nomadic senior van-dwelling Amazon employees. The book this is based on, my wife read it, and this is a fictionalized version of the book. The book takes a much harsher stance on how Amazon treats these people and gets away with it.
Sure it does.
It almost feels like the movie was approved by Amazon. How little it goes into it.
Yeah. When it first shows that logo outside the warehouse, I was like, wow, how'd they get permission to do that? Like they must have gotten permission to do that, right? Like, but it, you know, again, it didn't hit me as powerfully as something like Roma, but it touched me in the same kind of vein. I think what Chloe Zhao does best, I've only seen this in The Rider, is to set these seemingly mundane lives against this backdrop of this gorgeous setting. And it somehow makes even these tiny, seemingly insignificant interactions more poetic and more beautiful. I at least came out of this movie geeked to see what she does with Eternals for the MCU.
No kidding. Because
the visuals alone, you know, we've never seen an MCU movie that does this kind of thing. And if they let her do even a little bit of her thing, it's going to be something special. So I think I liked it more than you. But it's not going to be my vote for favorite of the year. I'll tell you that right now.
Interesting. That's a tease. That's what we call a tease, folks.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those, I'm fine with slow moving, barely anything happens kind of movies and everything. I mean, I'm a big Lost in Translation fan. So I got, they can appeal to me, but this one, for some reason, I will say the thing that I like the most is the consistency with the character. Frances McDormand very much wants to be alone in this movie. Mm-hmm. David Strathairn is putting on the full court press and she is not having it.
I like that.
I think that combination of words has never been spoken.
No, it hasn't.
In the world. It
definitely hasn't.
I do like that the movie avoids the cliches in that relationship, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think it would be easier to write it that she eventually sees something in him and decides. But instead, they form a friendship that I think is pretty meaningful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she wants nothing to do with that. She wants to be on her own.
Yeah.
I'm probably more, I lean towards Jeremy on this. It definitely is a tone poem of a movie. It's something you kind of have to be in the mode for, and I was. And I think it's the humanity of it that just, at the end of the day, just holds me for the movie. Just seeing, I think she has a way of filming actors as if they're real human beings and real human beings as if they're actors. Yeah. Like, I don't know how she does it. Like, somehow she has just people who are just normal people, like, you know, anybody that would be traveling in a, you know, across the nation, and they seem perfectly, you know, at ease with Frances McDormand in this movie as if they are, you know, compatriots.
Mm-hmm. I actually,
and that's not easy to do. I don't know. So
some of that is McDormand though, because I read that some of them didn't even know she was an actress until the end, and she said, well, that's my job.
She's favored to win her third Oscar, right?
Yes. Yeah. And
as long as Glenn Close doesn't win it, I'll be okay.
Well, Glenn Close is a different category. So,
oh, thank God.
But yes.
Glenn Close won an Oscar, and she wasn't even nominated in this category.
Yeah, I'll continue along some of the Oscars and then I'm going to skip around, but let's go with Minari. This is one of my favorite of the Oscar nominees. Mm-hmm. This one I really liked. Where are they coming from in this movie?
South Korea.
It's South Korea to Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And the husband of the father of the family wants to create this, you know, he wants to garden. That's his thing. He wants to make a big, huge, like, farm of some sort. But he's picked a plot of land that, while it is peaceful and serene and out of the way and everything, it doesn't have a real water source. It shows the sort of the fissures that happen in a marriage from someone being very obsessed with something like this and you know, not listening to their wife and not listening to what they need and not being around and everything. And I just really, really enjoyed this
one. Oh yeah, I am in complete agreement here with you on this. This one I think I liked a little more than Nomadland, but it's hitting similar feels. This is a one version of the American dream. And it's just obstacle after obstacle after obstacle. And then, you know, splashed in is this charming grandmother, young son relationship that you don't get in a lot of movies. Hard to think of any where it's been quite like this. Where they end up at the end of the movie, I think, is just beautiful. Mm-hmm. It really made me feel almost all my feels, and the acting, it's all subtitled for the most part. The acting's really, really good. Steven Yeun was like, blew me away. Yeun?
I think it's Yen.
Yen.
It's you.
I didn't know he had that different? In
Yuen?
I thought it was Yuen, but maybe it is Yen. I always, I'm going to say Yoon Young Jung, also nominated for an Oscar as the grandmother. Mm-hmm. You're not wrong about these performances. They're absolutely astonishing. Alan Kim, the little kid, shout out to the Critics' Choice Awards, my favorite award show.
Won the young
performer award, and I don't know if you've seen the clip, but it is the most adorable thing. Yeah, halfway through, he starts crying, and I just want to act in another movie. And I'm just like, how pure is that kid right now?
Yeah, he was great.
I still need to see that clip, but like the all-timer for me still is the Anna Paquin Oscar.
That's fun
because she doesn't say anything for the longest time, and you're sitting there going, oh no, she's not going to be able to say anything, and then suddenly she just breaks out this perfect speech.
I should say, by the way, that they moved from California to Arkansas. They had originally immigrated from Korea, but he was so fantastic in California that she wanted to stay there. The wife wanted to stay there.
That's right.
But he wanted to move to Arkansas. Mm.
Yeah.
The other thing that's been said a lot, but bears repeating, is just how unfortunate that for some of the award shows, this has landed in like foreign language feature and those kind of things, because it is genuinely probably the most American story mm-hmm. of the nominees.
It really
this year.
Is.
Like, it's about that quote unquote American dream.
It's not like the foreign language films haven't broken through before. Life is Beautiful was that. I mean, they've done it before.
Parasite.
Yeah. Parasite, of course. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of silly at this point to even suggest that a foreign language film can't cross over. So anytime I hear that, I'm like, yeah, it's just, you know, there's some bullshit going on.
Male and female awards. It's something eventually we'll do away with that category, and we'll just have a best picture from planet Earth, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The grandmother is great in this, though. Like, I love how like just out of fuck she is in this entire. She calls her grandchildren bastards while they're playing games and stuff. And he's like, ha ha, you lost, you bastard.
Sucks for you.
Yeah. But Minari is great. And then I'm gonna cover this one, and then we'll go on to some other stuff. Sound of Metal is on this list. I really, really, really liked this a lot. I think this covers a disability in a much different way than I have ever seen before. I don't know if it's a commune that he goes to. I guess these things mm-hmm. exist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had never seen anything like that before. And Riz Ahmed is just so good in this. He's so great.
Yeah. It's what I really found fascinating about this movie. It's about addiction in many ways, even though on the surface, it doesn't look like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is clean and sober from other addictions. And when he loses his hearing, he realizes he was addicted to his hearing and what that meant in his life. And the way that the movie plays with his loss of hearing and his response to it, and then others who have been through it and their response to him. I found it all really moving and really beautiful. And movies for me are at their best when they really put you in someone else's shoes, you know, really create empathy for you. For somebody else whose life experience you haven't had. Mm-hmm. And this movie really does that for me. And man, because I felt for him, and I was like, yeah, I'd probably feel the same way when he's thinking about the cochlear surgery or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And yet everybody else is cautioning him. And I just, this movie is, I really like
it. He thinks it's going to be a perfect solution, right? Because nobody seems to, well, people are warning him, but they don't seem to be warning him like, you know, hey, this is not perfect sound. At least we're not hearing it, and it could be from his perspective that people are telling him that, and he's just not hearing the message.
They're more saying you need to find peace with who you are, with this new version of you first, before you make decisions like this. Like they're more kind of on the mental side of things than the surgical side of things.
Yeah.
The support of Paul Rocky, I think is how you pronounce his name, who hasn't been in very many things, and he's not deaf himself, but he's a child of deaf parents, is amazing. And they've got a devastating scene between them. They've got some of the most enjoyable scenes between the two of them, he and Riz Ahmed's character, but they've also got one of the most devastating scene. And Olivia Cooke's playing his bandmate / girlfriend, and the way they resolve the storyline of that relationship is something I don't know if I've ever seen before, or at least recently. And I appreciated the authenticity of this movie and the realness of how this would play out, both with him, given his background, given his anger. I think it's a beautiful movie. It's a beautiful movie.
And they're both nominated.
Paul
are both nominated.
I would love to weigh in, but I need to make peace with who I am before I can watch this movie, because this guy reminds me of me too much. And it's not, I haven't made peace with the fact that I'm losing my hearing. Even yesterday, Aaron sent me a Twitter clip of a song, and it was lovely, but I couldn't understand any of the words, and I had to go outside and walk around for 15 minutes just to get over that hurdle. I'm getting emotional right now. It's too, it's too close for me right now. But I will watch it because I think it could help me. And I think, I might have, some insights that might help other people who are going through the same thing. So I don't want people to think I'm giving up on it. I just, I'm not ready to deal. So there you go.
I dig that.
And, of all the movies this year, one of the best endings of this year by far.
Definitely,
especially considering how it's been built up by the end of it. I want to get to a big movie here, and who knows how many people have seen this, but let's go with Wonder Woman 1984. I'm constantly appalled at how studios will make a movie that is as good as a first movie, and they seem to be making all the right moves. Like, let's get the same director that, you know, Patty Jenkins did a great job with this, that first movie. And, you know, let's do all these right things. And then they give them a story. Man, I gotta say, guys, this is the most confusing piece of bullshit fucking movie I've seen in a long time.
It's a terrible movie.
It really is. And with the actors that are in this, they don't deserve this. This is fucking, I mean, this is what would you call this? This is like hazing almost, putting these people through this movie. when we finally get to send this, there's going to be like 300.
Yeah.
And there's no way there's not 300 sends at the end of this.
Yeah.
I think one of my main things about this is just, you know, I always wondered why they decided that there was going to be a 1984. I know that they want to have some sort of, I don't know, story cohesion where, like, we don't want to see what Wonder Woman has done after Justice League yet, because we've got, I don't know, maybe other movies in the pipeline or something, but there's really no reason why this needed to be in 1984. There's no reason. The fact that somehow Batman doesn't know that there's something big happened in 1984 during his, you know, Justice League investigation, where, you know, we're seeing all the clips of everybody and everything. And I was just like, come on, guys. And then Chris Pine, I mean, there's a guy who deserves a lot more than this, but the fact that he's like, Wonder Woman can wish for Chris Pine to come back, but he's got to take the body of some other dude, some other poor asshole to do it. Why can't you wish for Chris Pine just to come back?
All the stupid wishes in this movie that are granted, like, how is that any different than him just like coming back as a distinct entity?
There is no difference. And there's no cool thing that happens with that body swapping thing, other than the fact that at the end, oh, let's give her a boyfriend at the end, since Chris Pine has died. Let's make it the same dude that Chris Pine was inside the whole time and everything. Like, that's just piss poor. And then, like, Kristen Wiig is like, I want to be an apex predator, and she's already had one wish. And she asks, like, I've already had a wish. And he's like, well, who, I can give any wish I want. I'm like, whatever. And it's like, no, the rule was that you only had one wish. And she's like, I want to be an apex predator. And then the next time we see her, she's in this fucking cheetah outfit or whatever the fuck it is. What are they doing, man? I mean, what in the fuck happened with this movie?
I don't know.
Anyway, I wanted to talk about Wonder Woman 1984 because we had to, basically. let's go to another movie that we've all seen, The New Mutants.
Ah. Hey, so this is this better than all of us thought it was going to be?
Yes, but I vote, the bar I vote yes. Really low.
Right. Very low bar, but yes.
I think the reason I marked it as one I wanted to talk about for sure was just how they handled the lesbian relationship, which is to say, they didn't shy away from it, but they didn't like go, here, look at what we're doing. This is a big deal. And I felt like it struck the perfect balance there. It's kind of a mess, but I enjoyed watching the mess.
I'll watch this thing probably like two or three more times over my life. Yeah. And I will not do that with Apocalypse or Dark Phoenix.
No, in fact, I'm going to that place in Eternal Sunshine to get Apocalypse wiped from my mind. I want to unsee it.
Yeah. I didn't like this movie for a really long time, and then I thought the ending of it, like towards the end, it started getting good, where they were using their powers, and the part where Maisie Williams gets to get the drop in on the doctor and everything, starts clawing her face and everything. I thought that was really good. And I thought the little battle with the big bear at the end and everything, you know, is what it is. I mean, I knew, you know, I was, you know, I like the Anya Taylor-Joy thing where she's, you know, she's about to walk out and fight that thing and, you know, and has her little one liner that she says and all that. But like, but yeah, for the most part, it had a glass feel because they're in therapy and they can't leave, which is, by the way, a huge theme of movies that I saw this year, people being trapped in a place and can't leave. That was a huge theme for some reason. I think what most of these movies were made before the pandemic, so it wasn't like a pandemic thing.
Yeah.
But I saw a lot of these. But anyway, yeah, I The New Mutants probably was a little bit better than I thought.
Even though this was filmed in like 2009, Anya Taylor-Joy is having a year, man, between this and Emma and Queen's Gambit.
Yeah.
She killed it. And I think she's really good in this, in New Mutants. She's bitchy and she's Russian.
I think the whole cast is pretty good. I like Maisie Williams and Charlie Heaton. I think they cast this well. I like the cast, and I like that it's all in one location. Mm. I think that, you know, the superhero thing where it's, you know, heroes we don't know who are in this one environment, like, that's ripe for fun stuff. And you can tell they really wanted this to be a horror movie. And then they were like, well, not quite a horror yeah. movie, but let's still keep some of that stuff. And that's where it gets kind of messy. But some of that stuff worked.
If they
some
had, of that stuff really worked. I can't help but thinking if they had let them go full bore into that,
yeah,
it would have worked.
I think so, too.
So anyway,
release the Boone cut.
Yes. Release. Oh, God. this is what's always going to happen now. Right. Because they're demanding right. the Ayer cut for Suicide Squad.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. Yeah. This is that's been going on time immemorial, though. Right. Like the whole like Rolling Stone had a bad review of Led Zeppelin albums back in the day. So therefore, yeah. everybody who had bad reviews can be like Led Zeppelin later on in life or whatever. It's the most annoying thing ever. It's a 1 out of 100,000 thing that happens, and people think, Led Zeppelin got bad reviews too, and you know, we'll just wait 20 years and everybody will love our music.
They do this with authors too, right? They're like, Mark Twain got rejected by 456 publishers before he got published, and I'm like, well, that's not going to happen for everyone who wants to be published. Like, Mark Twain was anyway. Fuck it.
Yeah, exactly. J.K. Rowling, same way.
Yeah.
Let's keep it on the comic book front and go with Birds of Prey. This Loved actually it. Got a theatrical release.
Sure did.
I enjoyed this. I don't think I liked it as much as some people did, but I enjoyed this.
What I enjoyed, and I tweeted about this in a now deleted tweet from an account I don't tweet from much anymore. What I enjoyed was the fight scenes were comprehensible.
Yeah.
Especially that jail scene where she's trying to break out the little girl and all the cells open. Yep. Like, compared to the MCU, like, I had no problem following that fight scene or any of the fight scenes in this movie, which I think speaks to how well they're choreographed and how well they're shot. Yeah, it's charming. It's way better than Suicide Squad. It gives her, you know, complete control of the narrative. Harley Quinn, I mean, introduces some other, what I thought were pretty cool characters. I thought the girl playing the little pickpocket was great. I thought Mary Elizabeth Winstead was great. the only one I didn't think was great that some people did was Ewan McGregor. I thought he was a little too far.
Yeah.
He's over the top, man.
I know,
a little too much.
I know, but that's
But here's the thing. Barry. No, I do not begrudge you your love for this movie. I really like it too. I liked it the first time I saw it. I thought it was really fun. Margot Robbie does the same thing Ewan McGregor is doing, but does it in such a more authentic way.
Yes.
She is completely over the top. She is way out there, but you believe that's a real person.
Absolutely.
A real human. I did not believe Ewan McGregor's character was a real human being.
Oh, come on.
So that was the difference I saw with those two characters. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. By the way, the girl's name is Ella J. Basco.
Oh, great.
Or Bosco.
Basco. So.
No, all of them, Journey Smollett Bell with the Black Canary thing, and Rosie Perez. God bless him, and far be it from me, middle-aged dude to say this, but like writing characters for 40-something, late 40, early 50-year-old actresses, especially in an action movie, certainly doesn't seem like the norm these days or ever, right? So it's nice to see her not only just have a cop role, but like actually get some meat on the bone and really have a comprehensible character.
Well, I'm pretty sure Margot Robbie is an executive producer on this film too, and I think she's taken ownership of this character in a way that's similar to what Ryan Reynolds did with Deadpool, in that she has nailed Harley Quinn, and she has an understanding of that character. So letting her help make decisions on what her movies should be like, I think is only going to make them better and better. I'm really excited, strangely, to see James Gunn's Suicide Squad, just because it looks like a Dirty Dozen with Harley Quinn in it, and that sounds rad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a fun movie.
Let's move on to Tenet, another movie that got a theatrical release in the middle of the pandemic. It was one of the sort of a dry run almost, I guess.
It was a canary in the coal mine, man.
Yeah,
it was. Very let's much. Test it out. Let's figure it out.
Very much so.
Wasn't it mostly that he's just stubborn, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that part.
Okay.
Mostly it's Christopher Nolan as being stubborn. I didn't understand this philosophy, by the way, about we just have to have this movie come out like right now, because it's going to be a new movie to most everybody, no matter what time they decided to come out with it. It's not the same as pushing it back due to production problems and having to do reshoots and stuff like that. The very idea that it wouldn't have been a huge success if you had waited until this or next year with it. I don't know. Maybe it was a Warner Brothers thing. Maybe they needed to cash in.
Company would just a few months later decide to day and date release all 2021 movies on HBO Max.
Exactly. I this was my only time I really braved the pandemic as far as feeling like I was doing something super dangerous, other than like going to a grocery store or something like that. and part of my my experience with this movie was being in a heightened state watching it, being in this whole like, I don't want people to be in here who don't have masks. I don't want people. Of course, somebody comes right up to me about 5 minutes into the movie and is like, did the movie already start? I'm like, what do you see on the screen? What the fuck do you see on the screen, dude? It's fucking Tenet. It's not a trailer. Sit down. Don't ask me the goddamn question. And then having to go through the whole thing of trying to understand what's being said, even in an IMAX theater. It took until it got on a Blu-ray and I could go through the subtitles and everything to really understand what was being said, which is a very big, huge obstacle to understanding this movie at all. And even after watching it three or four times, you still have things in there that are just like, but what about mm-hmm. Oh my God. easily the most confusing movie of the year. And Wonder Woman 1984 came out.
That's right.
Yeah. You guys have scared me off of Tenet. Like, I'll watch it for sure at some point, but
oh, it's good. It's good. It's confusing.
It's great. I love it. It's really fun to watch. I still love it.
You can watch it as a surface level movie, I think, as an action movie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And not really. I mean, I think it explains itself just enough to where you can say, well, I could probably dive into that, but if I don't want to, I can still enjoy this as a narrative.
Mm. Yeah. Adjust your critical thinking, you know, level and head on in. I have a blast with this movie. I think it's really fun. I love the concept. We send this, and part of it was, you know, putting our critical theory on and going, okay, does it really make sense? And there are many, many things in the how this works that don't make sense, just because they're paradoxes, mm-hmm. right? At the end of the day.
Yeah.
But there is also a real level of cleverness that he's doing here with the idea of palindromes and with the idea. One of the things I discovered that I wasn't even trying to discover when we were sending it is that scene-wise, this movie is a palindrome. Mm. Like, it has action scene happening at a certain time. Then it has, I think, three different expositional scenes. Then it has, you know, a different, the vault, mm-hmm. the airplane vault place action scene. Two more expositional scenes. Then two exposition, or then the car chase in regular time. Then right into the car chase in reverse time. Then two expositional scenes. Then the airplane vaulting. Like,
Jeremy Aaron's going to explain this entire movie to you, by the way. He's going to go through the entirety.
No, I don't.
No, I just, for me, I look at that stuff and I go, I love it when people think like that. I think that's really clever. I think that's really fun. And And so, yeah, I have a really good time with it. Plus, the visuals are so cool. Yeah. It's just so cool to watch some of this stuff.
No,
yeah.
I definitely enjoyed this movie. It just took about four or five times to watch it to really kind of get there. But, Jeremy, when you do end up watching this, follow the advice of grown-up Fleur Delacour in this movie where she says, don't try to think about it too much. And so when you see all these things, just go, oh, that's cool. I didn't know, blah, blah, blah. And you just, you know, don't even worry about it if it's possible or not. But yeah, it is very good. I feel like almost this movie is so complex. It should be a 10 episode, series or something.
Could be. Yeah.
Cause it would give them a chance to really dive into that world a little bit better. But, you know what? I don't know if that's right or not. I just feel like there's more you can explore, and who knows if there's ever going to be a sequel. Nolan's not a big sequel guy, so
I really do think that there was an aspect to this movie they cut out late in the process involving the idea of a sequel / character revelation.
Mm-hmm. I could watch kind of John thing. David yeah. Washington's character do spy shit for like three different movies, man.
Yeah.
He, R. Patz, and Kenneth Branagh are all fantastic in this. The acting is really, really good.
Branagh is doing the thing that Ewan McGregor couldn't do in Birds of Prey. Like, he is completely chewing the scenery and it works. Like, you know.
So get off of Ewan, dog.
I don't know. I just didn't like him in that movie.
No, he's fine. He's fun. He kills people and he it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Working our way down. Let's do another theatrical release. The Invisible Man.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Here's a movie that I had no hopes going into when I came in to watch it, because first off, there is a such thing, and this is something that Aaron doesn't have to deal with, but it's a trailer saturation that was going on with this movie. Everything like leading up to this had an Invisible Man trailer on it, and every time I watched it, I was like, this doesn't look good at all. But when you watch it, you realize, oh, this has a much deeper message, doesn't it? It has a lot going for it. And then Elizabeth Moss is incredible in this movie.
Oh my God.
It's another one of these like movies that comes out too early in the year, because if it had come out around October or something and had a streaming or a release or whatever, I think Elizabeth Moss would have gotten nominated for this.
You think? Yeah, I mean, she should have. Worthy. Yeah, I think so too.
I think she should have. She carries that movie, and both the surface level and the underlying themes you're talking about are all in her face and her performance. And that scene in the restaurant is one of the scariest fucking moments I've ever seen in a movie.
Because
it's so unexpected to me, and it's so like horrifying, because there's literal violence happening that would be horrifying, but then the realization of, oh fuck, I'm gonna get in trouble for this is gonna be blamed on me.
It's all just like shock, and then
I appreciated the technological aspect that dabbles in some actual technology that's being developed in terms of, you know, using cameras to make something look invisible. It's obviously not there in the real world to where it is in this movie. But man, everything about this works. Everything. All the performances are great. The way it sort of echoes what women have to deal with from the patriarchy on a general day, even not in a horror movie. It's one of my very favorite movies of the year. And I can't say enough good things about it. I've seen it three times now.
Yo, we'll talk about this at length, I'm sure, in Promising Young Woman. But what I didn't expect, but I appreciated, was the tiny, 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 and I guess that's a definition, microaggression from the job interviewer saying, you know, did you go to Paris? Because that's where all beautiful women have to go. And that's it. He doesn't do anything else necessarily that you would say is creepy or pervy or something like that. And it's, you could say glossed over, but that stood out like a giant stab in the eyeball to me, mm-hmm. not having gone through that, obviously. And it has nothing to do with the plot, but it has everything to do with the plot, you know,
yeah.
like the underlying message for it. Oh, this movie yeah. absolutely floored me.
The, you know, the thing about this movie is it takes a horror trope, which is someone who has either seen ghosts or they see something impossible or whatever, and they spend the whole movie trying to be believed, right?
Yeah.
And they turn that being believed thing into this metaphor about being believed about being in a terrible, abusive relationship and yep. everything. That is where horror does its best work a lot of times, is when it makes this kind of social commentary, and it's not totally hidden, because she has her one big moment where she talks about how she was abused in one of her best scenes in this movie. But this is where horror does its best work, for sure. No doubt about it.
Very reminiscent to me of the feeling I had after watching Get Out, right? Mm-hmm. Like the fact that it's just nailing the underlying theme so well, and you feel it, and it so well relates to the overarching plot and what's going on, that you feel like you've experienced something that is interesting on a surface level, on a movie level, but even more interesting on a social level and an empathy level. Yeah, I think The Invisible Man is
great. Talk also, about best endings. This is up there yes. with Sound of Metal.
But also, it's got style, baby. Like, I don't know if there's a name for it yet. I tweeted about this, but I love when Lee Winnell follows a person who's falling down to the ground with the camera. He does it in Upgrade, and he does it in this movie, and I'm all in on whatever he's going to do next.
It comes out of nowhere, too. Like, you're seeing just a regular yep. with an invisible man, like, fight scene, and then all of a sudden, thunk, and then back yep. up. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Since it was mentioned and it's apt to talk about, let's go Promising Young Woman on the next one.
I ain't never seen a movie like this.
I haven't either. This is, I love me some Carey Mulligan, man. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you mentioned Francis being the front runner. I think it's neck and neck with Carey as far as the award right now.
I like how you're on I haven't checked first the odds, name but... basis with all these.
That's right. Me and Carey, yes, well, I haven't met them, so. We're rapping about a few things.
Yeah. After she got the nomination, she called and she was like, "Did you hear?" I was like, "Totally, girl."
By the way, another Margot Robbie production, or she's part of the production.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So yeah, she is a woman who is pretending to be like sloppy drunk at bars and have men, nice guys, come and pick her up. And promise a ride home and nothing else. But of course, she's always running into guys like Adam Brody. This seems like to be Adam Brody's role, right? He does this a lot. He did it in Jennifer's Body, didn't he?
Same thing.
Oh, yeah.
He does this a lot. Adam Brody, and then there's a host of other, like, there's McLovin is in this, Chris from his class, and
Chris Lowell.
Yeah. But she pretends to be sloppy drunk and gets these rides home from men who say they're just being the nice guy, the knight in the shining armor. Of course, they're always looking to take advantage of the situation. And then she's like, whoop, surprise, I'm not drunk, and I'm going to turn the tables on you and everything. And not only turn the tables, like, you know, it's like it's about to go too far or anything like that, but turn the tables on these guys are not violent. They're not ready to just, like, I don't know, do a violent thing. She turns the tables at a point where they are more likely to try to backtrack and say, this is not what I was trying to do. This is, you know, that's what's interesting to me. It doesn't ever get to that point where they're like pulling out guns or knives or, like, you know, or anything like that. Do they?
I mean, until the end. I mean, you know, where this movie ends up going, definitely. So the movie is, I think, in that point, making the is saying, yes, it's very much about the nice guy thing. And it's very much about the idea of if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem, you know, kind of idea. Mm-hmm. But it does go so far at the end to say, and this is what happens when you let it go too far, you know, kind of idea. So,
but she, you know, she runs into an old, classmate and everything. And this is a, I thought this was a part of the movie that was a little bit too predictable, maybe a little bit, when she runs into the old classmate and she starts talking about how, you know, she had a friend who went through all, you know, went through all of this before and everything, and nobody believed her and all that. That was the one part of the movie I was like, okay, we know where this is going, right? Like the guy that she met, part of this old class, this old, you know, he's gonna have something part of his past that where he was in on this, right? Where he was in this room or whatever when this happened.
You're right. But they subvert that so much, like with, because she is a total.
Are you talking about Bo Burnham? Are we talking about Bo Burnham's character now? Yeah.
Who's great in this? But they subvert
and
it
them together. They are so good together,
because she's a closed book, man. Ain't nothing getting in there, like personally, physically, emotionally, and he's got to prove himself to her. And the way this resolves, it's interesting to me, that's the, marketing, strategy for this, is to show her at the end of the movie with that wig on and in the nurse outfit and everything, when, yes, that's when the movie turns on its head, you could say, but her character is much more than that. I guess it's, you have to show sexy Carrie Mulligan in a nurse costume to sell tickets or streams or whatever.
I think it's more subversive than that.
It is misleading. And I guess if it's intentionally misleading, then it's brilliant.
I think it is. I think the movie is saying something there about men's relationship to sexuality and how they see women and the clothes they wear and all that stuff. I think this movie is very purposefully calling us all males into account for how we view the world, you know, from our privilege and what that looks like as we interact with women. And, you know, the idea of you ask for it by wearing that skirt or whatever, that is just so awful and ugly. But many people have said over history that, you know, that the women bear some responsibility for the clothes she was wearing. You know, like all of that stuff, the movie is taking us to task and just saying, you know, you may not feel like you're horrible, but have you had these thoughts? Like, how far has that thought progressed in your mind? And understand that even that is the seed of something nefarious. And man, I really appreciated the worldview of this movie and just kind of how thorough it was
and unique,
in portraying
and
that.
Unique. This movie is a unicorn. I was
really, is.
I was in not a fetal position, but like a mental fetal position for a little bit after I watched this film.
Mental fetal.
But yeah, that was what I was about to get to when I was talking about the Bo Burnham thing being predictable, is that I think the movie knows it's predictable and it gets to a point where it has another surprise in store for you afterwards. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed this movie a lot. I really thought, this was really good. All right, so let's look at, here's a movie that I did not see, but the other three of you have seen. Talk about Emma and some more Anya Taylor-Joy.
I kept passing this on the dial whenever it was on HBO. I think it was HBO. Because I felt a bit of burnout with Jane Austen, and it's not her fault. She's been dead a long time.
Damn it, Jane.
And even Emma has been done a few times, even what feels to me recently with Gwyneth Paltrow. That was the right one, right?
Mm-hmm. And it was a long time ago, but it does seem like it was.
It feels like yesterday.
Yeah.
It was before she started selling vagina candle rocks.
That's very true. It was before that.
But I ended up, it was one of those days where I literally didn't want to watch anything on any of the other channels. And I went ahead and gave this a shot. And I was quite charmed by this. Mm-hmm. She's fantastic. I did not realize, because I don't feel like everybody can do Jane Austen. I feel like it takes a certain kind of actor to do that and not feel fakey. But the production design is really awesome too. It's almost like pop past. Like it looks like Jane Austen, but it's colorful. And the hats all have a little extra something. It doesn't look like the... I'm sorry, it just doesn't look like Pride and Prejudice. It looks like Willy Wonka's Pride and Prejudice. I'm sorry, I'm trying to compliment the movie.
I know exactly what you're saying.
And yeah, I really enjoyed it. In fact, I recommended it to my wife, who's also burnout on Jane Austen. So I didn't fall in love with it, but I wanted to make sure I mentioned it because it was a surprise to me, and I think it might be to some of the listeners as well.
It's fine. It's perfectly fine. If you've Clueless is based off of Emma, right?
Yes.
I mean,
I was just going to say the only thing I don't like about this movie is how much it steals from Clueless. Right. So
I mean, the only knock of this is that you've seen this film before, and there's I think there's probably a little bit of an overlap of Bridgerton and stuff like that, and like kind of like anachronistic pop, like you're saying, like the colors and stuff like that, Marie Antoinette type of thing. But you've seen the movie before, you've heard the story before, but Anya Taylor-Joy is absolutely great in this. Bill Nye, I really, really liked his performance in this, as the crotchety old dad. And I gotta be honest with you, man, Mr. Friskets and Mr. Whiskers and Mr. whoever the fuck she's trying to court and like manipulate, they all run together to me. They all could be Joe Alwyn. They all could be Dylan O'Brien.
They all are Joe Alwyn. Joel Alwyn plays four roles. He's Eddie Murphy in this movie.
It could totally be him with like a bigger nose or like shorter hair. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, no, I think you guys are right. It's fine. It's not, you know, going to blow you away, but I was surprised. I didn't expect it to have any quality, and it had a good measure.
And there's a reason it's nominated for two Academy Awards. It's nominated for makeup and hair and costuming because this movie is absolutely gorgeous. Yes, it is so beautiful.
It is.
Let's talk a little bit of animation. Here's another movie that had a theatrical release. It's Onward. It's Pixar's first movie of the year. This was a major disappointment, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, I guess I'll let you guys go first, or I can talk from the positive angle. I loved this movie, but that should not be a surprise to anyone who knows how I feel about Pixar. I think this movie is really fun. I laughed really hard at several points. There's the moment with the van where it starts galloping. I lost it. So stuff like that. It's got a really good sense of humor. I think Chris Pratt and Spider-Man.
Tom Holland. Now you're doing me.
Thank you. Pratt and Holland, I think, are
perfectly
Star-Lord cast.
And Spider-Man walk into a bar, and the van starts galloping.
And man, did I cry. Like, the kind of sneakiness that it pulls the you thought it was about fathers and sons, but it's about brothers thing really got me. You know, I mean, you know, I don't mean for this to be the classic, you know, fathers of daughters kind of moment, but as somebody who has a brother, like, I don't know, that stuff really nailed me. So I was not disappointed at Onward, but I know a lot of people were. So I think it's fun.
I think it's harmless. It's just I have come to expect more from a Pixar movie than fun and harmless, and that's maybe partially my fault. And we're going to talk, I assume, about Pixar's other release this year at some point, which I felt like it had a lot more heart and a lot more depth and a lot more to say. Whereas Onward, I do think the brother moment is awesome, but I feel like that's it. Like, it's all slapstick silliness until then. So I liked it. I didn't hate it. He found heart somewhere early on in the dragon map.
Not necessarily that one, but there is when they're riding the Cheeto. There is this moment where they're talking about the death of, you know,
but they're riding a Cheeto, father. Aaron.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, I know. That's what makes it beautiful. That's what makes it amazing.
That's what makes it ridiculous and hard for me to connect. They're riding a Cheeto.
Well, part of this may also be that recently my family was looking at not having me in this world. And, you know, that's been within the last couple of years. And so I know that struck a very personal level with me and my family as well. I know when my wife and I saw it in a theater, because, you know, this did come out before the pandemic. Yeah, she was sobbing during that scene.
So now you're making us feel like dicks. So appreciate
that. No. Look, everybody has their own personal stories and experiences, right? Like, you know, so... And this, and this hit me in that way.
Hate this movie all you want, but I almost died.
Yeah.
Did you know it was based on Homer's The Odyssey?
Yeah, exactly. I was disappointed in the whole quest. Like you have I know that you're trying to get to this point. You're absolutely right. It is a movie that you think is about a father-son relationship, and it ends up being about brothers and everything, but the quest to get there is immensely unsatisfying to me. And a lot of the stuff in there was like ridiculously cynical, I guess is what I would call it in our sort of context, especially the fact that they're able to use their father's legs, who's just a torso,
to land on that one thing
in that deep water. And I'm like, whoever made this quest, Did they know that there was going to be somebody that had a torso to use, a spare torso? Not a torso, or someone without a torso? Like I was just sitting there going, how does this quest get won without that father figure there?
No, you're right.
You're not wrong. And just all the stuff at the end too. Just, I mean, it's just, this is not, to me. To me, this may be a good movie on its own, but like you have to, it feels like you have to compare it to all the other Pixar movies that come before it, right? Pixar has been known to come out with those knock it out of the park, especially on their originals, knock it out of the park kind of movies. And when they come out with one that doesn't, you're just like, why couldn't you have realized this world just a tiny bit better? Like we know Pixar is able to do. And when it comes out like that, you just like, oh, well, I guess that's pretty good. But if this movie had been, let's say this movie had come out in 1995 and it was the Toy Story of its day or whatever, would this have launched Pixar the way it, you know, the way Toy Story did? I don't know if that's a fair comparison, really. But
like, no, but I hear what you're saying. I think it's a valid point.
But that's what I was sort of feeling. You really shouldn't. Sure. I mean, as a rule, compare movies to others and say, well, because it's not as good as this one, it's not very good or whatever. But I think from the brand, I expect more. So like, that's where it fell down for me. So anyway, and then yes, Soul came out, later on Disney Plus. And I really enjoyed Soul. Soul was really, really good. I really liked the ending, but it's another one of those that has it both ways kind of endings. But I did like the ending regardless of that. Let's talk about Soul.
You talk about a cynical movie that I do love. I mean, the circumstances by which and the rules by which they play are don't get into those like you do Tenet. If you want to enjoy this movie, you want to get the themes, you want to get the emotion, and you want to savor the performances, especially Tina Fey and Jamie Foxx. And Jamie Foxx, man, absolutely kills it. Felicia Rashad kills it. Kills it. That's a bad term, but like, you know, for a kid's movie about death, it's like Coco. Like, I don't know how they pulled this off. Like this miracle of making this, you know, adorable and poignant and animation that is unlike anything else. The polygon counselors or whatever that, whatever they are, that usher in the afterlife and the pre-life are, you know, amorphous shapes, but they have character. And I found myself loving this movie more than I thought I was going to. It's not an A+ to me, but I thought it was brilliant.
Well, Plus, I think it's important to teach kids that when you die, there might be an escape hatch to get back to Earth.
Right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Maybe you come back if, say, you run away and you jump off an escalator. Shit. You know, who knows what will happen? You go through the Bifrost.
That's one of those.
Go ahead.
Just a brief thing. It's one of those things in movies that always kill me. There's like billions and trillions of people who've died, and that now this one guy is the one who figures out how to get back. You know, like, I know that's the story, but like, it really blows my mind that it's this one guy that's like, all right, well, let's figure out how we go back to Earth. You know, nobody's tried this before.
Yeah, nobody else has ever thought, I'm not supposed to be dead yet.
Yeah.
Fucking.
Anyway, you were saying.
I was just going to say, I appreciated the music. You know, I grew up playing piano lessons, taking piano lessons and playing instruments, and I've always had a love of music. And so I think one of the things that appealed to me about this movie, and maybe one of the things that endeared it to me, is how infused with music it is. Mm-hmm. Because it's basically about death and then music in that order.
That's your boy, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross too, man.
They're my boys.
Yeah, sure. I don't know.
All right. I like
the fact that they drew him with the fingers of someone who would have a great command of piano, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's got these, like, they've drawn them very painstakingly in a way that you're like, yeah, that guy can probably really, you know, really, you know, he can mess up a lot of stuff, but like, he mess up a piano pretty good, you know? That was one thing that stuck out to me for some reason. And the animation, of course, for Pixar has become some ridiculous next level. Even Onward has beautiful, scenery in it. But they're doing stuff with lights and shading and all this other stuff. That's just, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of places you can hear me, talk about Soul, other podcasts, that kind of thing. I think what I'll focus on here is just to say, are we ready for Pixar to do a movie where they aren't catering to the entire family? Are we ready for Pixar to go next level and just be like, this one's just for adults. Yes. We're not going to throw in the wacky side characters. We're not going to throw in the...
We're ready. Is Pixar ever going to do that,
though? That's what I mean. Yes. The we in this case is, you know, Pixar themselves, the world, the, you know, culture. I hope so, because I think that's the only way to kind of go next level on this for them as a company is to go, you know what, we don't just have to do the broad spectrum appeal that we have been able to do. Now, the fact that they can do that so well, obviously they should continue to do that as much as they can. And, you know, this movie is, I think, another example that they can still hit it out of the park. This, I think this is a, you know, Inside Out, Coco. There are several recent original films that I think they really nailed.
So you're saying you want them to go into porn?
I know.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. Yeah, I'm just thinking. Where is the adult industry?
I would love to see
computer generated right now.
The first few minutes of Up shows that they can handle an adult story and relationship without having to do cutesy magic things. And I would love to see them put out a drama. I don't think they're ever going to do it. Partly because they're owned by Disney.
Yeah, I don't know.
And partly because their reputation is such that they would have to literally market the shit out of the fact that this is not for your kids. Maybe and if they make something that is for adults, but you can bring your kids to it, that would be a minor miracle. Because kids need a lot more stimulation.
Yeah, no, I just think there's a version of this movie that could have been that for them. The version of this movie that could have been closer to that. Obviously, there's stuff ingrained in here that is, you know, for the younger set. But I don't know. It's one of those things that I think about sometimes. And you know, obviously, as much as I'm, you know, fanboy out about their stuff, I have a lot of respect for their talent. Pete Docter, I'm so glad he's running the place now. Like he just has this real ability to think abstractly about their themes and what they're doing. And, you know, to do Inside Out and Soul, and even the Monsters, Inc. Movies are, you know, have a lot of this too. I'm glad he's kind of pressing the buttons there right now.
Well, I think one thing that also could get lost in this is when we say adult, we don't necessarily mean R-rated or anything like
that. Oh, no. Yeah, like, no, not necessarily.
Like, you know, I was thinking of, you know, a Straight Story with Richard Farnsworth. That's a kind of, you have a movie like that where, yeah, again, I think the sort of heart of your question was, is do they, can they do a movie without the wacky characters that come in and
right.
blah, 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 blah. Like I feel like the movies that you mentioned, Soul, Inside Out and Coco all have this, they're in this other world, right? Where like, and then, mm-hmm. and they always run into these, you know, hey, I've been here. I've been down in this one room for 5,000 years. And, you know, wacky right. and crazy.
My name's Bing Bong.
Yeah. So
we're your dogs, but now we're dragons.
I yeah, think they could. The they would have to market it a certain way, right? They would have to. But you're talking about Disney here. They have, that's all they do with the market. So I've been looking at, and I think Jeremy and I talked about this after what, Incredibles, Ratatouille or whatever. It was around that area where we thought that Pixar might start doing that. And that was 15 years ago. So, you know, maybe not. You know, somebody's brought it up there.
I think what you may see happen is they might spin off a new division of Pixar and come up with a subsidiary name that in itself says more adult oriented stories. Mm-hmm. And so it can be Pixar continues doing the whole family stuff, but Pixar Up All Night does an adult softcore porn.
Pix rated R.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Pixar Stockings.
Pixar, it didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, nice.
Here's another animated movie that only Aaron and I have seen. It is Wolfwalkers.
Oh, yes.
What did you think about this movie, Aaron?
I loved it. I think it's gorgeous. I love the animation style. Mm-hmm. I think there's some, you know, beautiful things being said here about the father-daughter relationship, also about the idea of how we interact with nature and, you know, what that means. I don't think it's, I don't think there's necessarily anything groundbreaking here. It just does what it does so beautifully. And it's so fun to watch.
Exactly. It's so, kind of got a Kubo and the, two strings.
Yeah. Kind of, two strings. Yeah.
Kind of a feel to it and, everything where it's real life, but there's this mystical, you know, there's this mystical side to it. If you're willing to go out and explore, the very, very basic, story is that there are these, I guess you have to call them werewolves, right? They're werewolves, that live in the forest. I mean, they're wolves to everybody, I guess, to the humans. I don't think they know that there's humans transforming into wolves.
Right.
But they're about to, smash down the forest and, you know, expand the kingdom. And one of the soldiers' daughters goes out into the woods and encounters someone around her same age who is a wolf, and she starts to the main character, one of, you know, the main human character starts realizing she has some of this in her as well, and so they start this friendship and everything, and the one wolf girl, she said that her mom has gone out to, I don't know, find help or find her. I can't remember what it was that she went out to go find, but the human, girl finds out that her mom's been, caught and is in a cage in the castle. And she has to prove to this girl that, yes, her mom, I saw your mom in the castle. She's not out where you think she is. So there's a lot of that going on. But yeah, I thought this was really good too. This is just one of those, you know, in a world full of this computer animation and everything. And for all I know, this was computer animated too, but
I'm sure there's some.
But in a world where there's that glossy sheen of 3D animation and everything, it's good to see one every once in a while that's not, that doesn't do that, you know. So I thought this was good.
Yeah.
Feels like there was another animated movie, but I can't remember. Oh, Animal Crackers.
Oh, hey, we like that one.
We know that one.
It finally got a release, right? We had been talking to Scott Sava for was it 3 years now?
Yeah, about that. Mm-hmm.
It had that, you know, it had that, has gone through a lot of ups and downs that we've heard about. And there was, I remember after we did the first interview with him, there were a lot of people who were really interested in watching this movie, and they would come on Facebook and they say, I see the release date on blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, don't know what to tell you. It's a they throw those up there every once in a while. Doesn't mean that it's going to actually come out. And of course, then it wouldn't, the date would come and go and everything. And I remember we did a preview once, a spring preview, and they're like, you forgot Animal Crackers. I was like, yeah, I don't think so. finally it came out, and thank God, man, it finally came out. And this is a fun movie. I think it's for much younger people. It's not like adults, I guess adults can really enjoy this too.
Sure.
But it feels like for your kid, your average kid, like is, you know, your older, like 12-year-old kids or whatever may not respond to this. It's a little bit younger than that, maybe. Yeah, but magical animal crackers, man. It turned you into animals.
Wholly unique animation. Excellent voice cast. If you do want to hear more in-depth stuff, with us and the director Scott, you can look at episode 130 or episode 239, where we talked to Scott after it came out, just to let you know.
Oh, wow.
All right, everybody, it is time to talk about BetterHelp.
Yeah, it is. It's BetterHelp.
It is.
I'll tell you what, and I want to hear from Aaron about this too.
Yeah.
But I just want to say real briefly, we talk about the service and the platform and stuff like that, but I also want to mention how really, really good these counselors are. These are not, you know, just folks they've plucked off the street and said, hey, you want to get into a computer is what I was going to say. Like Zoolander, like the files are in the computer. you want to get in front of a computer and talk to people. No, these people, are very trained. They're very astute. And I had an experience like that fairly recently where something was drawn out of me that I wasn't even expecting. So BetterHelp as a service is fantastic. But the licensed professional counselors that they hire are top notch. And just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, I was really appreciative of something Jeremy said a lot, which is you don't have to feel like you need therapy to benefit from therapy. And when I started using BetterHelp and found a great counselor, somebody to talk with, I wasn't in a place where I was at the end of my rope or in, you know, desperate need of something, but I still find it very, very beneficial. And, you know, we talk about whatever's happening in my life. It gives me, there's something about, I think this is one of the really beautiful things about therapy for me. There's really something beautiful about just saying things out loud instead of just thinking them. And that is, and a lot of people don't realize, you think you're processing things in your head, but when you say them out loud, it's a whole, to another human being, it's a whole different level of understanding what you think, how you feel, what you believe. So that's been very evident to me, is this idea of just actually putting words in the air actually helps to clarify a lot of how I feel and what I'm going through. So no matter where you're at on that level, you might be at the end of your rope. You might not, whatever the case may be. I think you will benefit from having just somebody to talk to where there's just that freedom to put words out in the air and then deal with what those words actually mean to you as you say them. So,
yeah, man, that's good stuff. Like we've all heard the phrase, like, you know, you need a sounding board, right? Like, mm-hmm. I have a friend that, pre-pandemic, we would do lunch, you know, once a week or so, and we know each other really well, and we're able to even stop each other and go, are you doing this because of this or this? And it's helpful, it's beneficial to get that stuff out, like Aaron is saying. Therapy is like that times 10 or more, right? Because these people are trained, they've gone to school for this. It's not just somebody who's like, I think I'd be good helping people. These people know what they're doing. They're professional sounding boards, and they know how to direct not only the conversation, but your line of thought. like Barrett was saying, something pulled out of him that he wasn't even expecting. That is what you get with these level of professionals.
Yeah, man. So it's all from the privacy of your own home. It's all, you know, laptop, computer, PC, tablet, phone. You schedule everything on there. You message your counselor on there. You have live chats, video chats, text chats. Everything is on your counseling page, what they call a counseling room on BetterHelp.com. So if you go to BetterHelp, HELP.com/Sincast, you get 10% off your first month. Use that month. Really, really use that month. All you do is you sign up, you log in, you answer a few questions about what's going on in your life. You get matched to a counselor. They contact you within 24 hours. Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt, and you're on your way and to counseling land. And use that first month wisely, because it's good stuff, man. Go to BetterHelp.com/Sincast. Cannot stress this enough. Whether you're in Aaron's boat, whether you're in my boat, whether you're in somebody else's boat altogether, whether you're in a different ocean, just try it. BetterHelp.com/Sincast.
All right. Let's get back into the Oscars. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which is sort of the shoe-in Chadwick Boseman best actor win. And he is great in this, although I still feel like he's a supporting actor more than he's a lead actor in this, but who knows how
that... It's so interesting that, yeah, the category... I mean, people say category fraud, which is a little extreme for my taste, but the idea of, like, Judas and the Black Messiah has both of its main actors nominated for Oscars in supporting actor.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah.
It's always weird.
That's clearly incorrect. Yes. But this movie plays out like a stage play. I don't know. Was it a stage play before it got to screen?
Indeed.
It was. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was. I forget his name. Same guy that did Fences.
But it's about these musicians who are going. These, I guess they're the backup band to Ma Rainey, played by Viola Davis, who's incredible as always. Mm-hmm. I mean, just commands the screen like no other. And she's late to the party, so there is time for these musicians. I guess most of them are much older, and Chadwick Boseman is a much younger musician, and he has different ideas about what to do. He wants to play this Ma Rainey's Black Bottom song a way different from what everybody wants, including Ma Rainey herself. And everybody's like, you're never going to get her to do this. There's no way. But she's like, it's like these producers thought this was a better idea. This was a better way to do it and everything. And this Chadwick Boseman's character is got this huge belief in these producers. It's so fucking heartbreaking.
It's tragic
all the way through. It's tragic. This. Oh yeah. My God. It's so, every time he brings them up, you're like, dude, no, God, you're going into a, you're running into traffic right now. Yeah. It's, oh my God. But he keeps saying that, you know, the producer's this, the producer's that. I'm going to be a big musician. I gave them my songs, and we're going to do something with them and everything. And, but his sort of manner, it rubs the older guys the wrong way. And it gets into this whole, like, there's a lot of very just like white knuckle arguments in this movie and everything. I thought it was really well done. This is one of those that commands your attention from the minute it starts.
Yeah. It's August Wilson is August the Wilson, playwright, yep. August Wilson,
Chadwick Boseman and Viola Davis and the lady that plays her girlfriend are all fantastic in this. I do want to shout out Coleman Domingo, who played,
yes,
in Euphoria, yes, as Rue's mentor or sponsor, especially in that special episode that they did. he is, I said that before, he's the glue of this movie, I think. He's the glue of the band. He's the glue of, he wants to play both sides. Like, he wants to keep the musicians happy, but he also wants to keep Ma happy and the producers happy. I love this movie. I absolutely adore this movie. I hate the ending. I hate this ending. I understand this ending,
it's interesting,
but I hate
right?
it.
Yeah. It's interesting because it almost feels like the ending of the movie tells you it's about something that it didn't seem to be about the whole time. Like, especially character-wise. Yep. Like, this is Ma Rainey's movie, and the ending's like, well, was it Ma Rainey's movie? And it's like, well, yeah, no, I'm with you. There's something about the ending that that is a little off in this. But I really do enjoy it. Honestly, if I were the one picking best female actor performance, it would be Viola Davis for me. I think she is astounding in this movie.
Oh yeah.
When she breaks her facade, it's absolutely glorious. You know, when she can talk to Coleman Domingo's character without the pretense of how she has to talk to these producers to get her record done. It's beautiful. There's some beautiful moments.
It really is. I think she's great in it. That alone makes it worth a watch for me. And in addition to that, there's some really, the Bozeman performance is also alone, you know, worth the watch for this one. It's just, there's just a lot of great stuff here.
When you say you don't like the ending, is it the major action that happens at the end of this movie?
Yes. Okay. At the very, very end. Yeah.
But not the sort of the coda where basically the producers are stealing his music essentially.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the coda.
No. I'm talking about the major event that comes out of nowhere and is essentially glossed over.
Oh, okay. Sure. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying.
That
doesn't bother me as much, but
that doesn't make the major event does not make sense to me. The producers doing what they do totally makes sense to me. There's just an aspect of that that took me completely out of the movie. But you know, everything leading up to that is absolutely genius.
Aaron, you're going to be a one man band where nobody gets hurt.
All right, let's do it.
Let's talk about The Father, a movie that I've been hearing about for about a month now. Here it is, great, but I have not. None of the other of us have gotten a chance to see it. So,
yeah, 6 nominations, Best Picture included. It is worth it to watch for the Hopkins performance. He is astounding in it. This is a movie that is not only about the idea of, you know, what it means to grow old and to deal with dementia, those kind of things, but it allows you as the audience to experience that in a way that I don't think I've ever seen in another movie. I think it's well worth the while. It's very creative in the way that it approaches the topic and all that. Despite Barrett's eye rolling,
I was doing that up until you mentioned dementia, and then I was like, oh, that's not.
I have never seen I'll just give you an example of one of the things the movie does, and it does different examples of this throughout, but it's very early on. We are from Anthony Hopkins' perspective, and a character that we knew in the first scene as his caretaker is now approaching him as his daughter. And he can't figure it out. And it's a different actress. It really puts you in the mindset of how confusing and frustrating and horrible and traumatic it must be to experience that kind of stuff. And he's fabulous. And he is fabulous.
That's interesting.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then this one, I mean, this has got 4 nominations, but for, I think, a lot of technical stuff, News of the World, is the second Tom Hanks movie to come out this year. Now, what a year Tom Hanks had, right? Diagnosed with COVID early on, one of the first major stars to get it, and then he's got 2 movies that come out. One's Greyhound, and then this one.
Well, 3 if you include Borat.
Oh, that's true. Oh, the Borat thing is pretty funny.
Central role.
Yeah.
Central role.
Go ahead.
Yeah, news of the world is one that it's okay that you just get around to it when you get around to it. Mm-hmm. I think you might find something valuable or interesting there. Hanks is always great, but I this isn't one I would full throatedly be like, you have to see this right now. It's really wonderfully done. It is very much a Western. Mm-hmm. So, you know, however you feel about Westerns is going to, you know, play a lot here. But he's great in it, as he is in pretty much everything he does.
Yeah.
And I get around to it.
I think the thing for me on this was I was kind of hoping, maybe you can't make a movie about this, but I was kind of hoping this would be more about his job than it was about him trying to find parents for this kid that he's found.
Right.
And, right. And so I was sitting there going, it would be nice if he was going around to all these different places. Like the scene where he's talking about, what was it? Is it the bridge or something? I can't remember what it is, but he's telling these people about what's happening, around mm-hmm. them, and they get all pissed off and it's almost one of those blame the messenger type things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it does a good job of showing what he has to deal with and how he has to calm everybody down and things like that so that he doesn't get hurt and all this. But I was kind of hoping it was more about that than what it was.
Nobody ever uses the phrase fake news, but they sure do wink at it. Like there are whole scenes where it's like, no, read our version of the news, newsreader. It's like, okay.
Let's get back into it. Let's talk about Borat, subsequent movie film.
Yeah. Speaking of Tom Hanks.
Yeah, speaking of Tom Hanks.
He's so involved in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we joke, but for me, now, I don't like this movie as much as a lot of people do. But what I do love about this movie is how clever it plots itself around what must have been a crazy shooting experience, because this movie was, I think, intended to be about something other than what it became about when the pandemic started. And so the way it plays all of that together and actually is really a clever twist at the end. I thought that was genius. I thought that was really smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They storied it.
You mean the actual narrative is such as it is?
Yeah, as it is. Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
I fairly enjoyed this. I think because of the first movie and the surprise that it has involved with it, I didn't like it as much, because the second time around of Borat is, you know, at this point you've got a whole bunch of Sacha Baron Cohen stuff in your head already. You have the Borat, you have Bruno, which is the same as Borat, only a different character. And then this comes along, but no, there were some pretty clever things in this. Here's a question. Do you think in the Rudy Giuliani scene, he should have allowed it to go farther than it did?
I don't know if there's legal ramifications. That's like, as far as like putting your workers in danger, like mm-hmm. I think there is. So I think my answer is no. Based on that. And I think that's how he's explained it too, is that there was a moment where he had to make a decision about the protection of the people involved in, you know, the production. And I think that's right.
And you have to figure out what is the intention of that scene? Mm-hmm. Is it to expose, you know, Giuliani's hypocrisy and
hypocrisy,
stupidity,
right?
And stuff like that. Yes. Well, that's what I'm getting to, actually. Or is it to literally get him in a gotcha moment, literally with his pants down? Mm-hmm. And if you did, I hate to say this, would anything have changed from what people take away from that? I mean, he could say, well, I always drop my pants to tuck my shirt in.
Would have always been that kind of excuse, right?
It would have been, right.
I always do this. I always do that. Doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. So I think you're right. You're both right. I think it could have gone on farther, but I think the end result would have been the same of how that is portrayed.
It really put me through sort of a moral quandary, because mm-hmm. I was sitting there thinking, because after this scene was leaked online and everything, a lot of people came out and said, why does he come in and burst down the door so quickly? Like, you know, he could have really gotten him in something. And then I was just like, yeah, but how far do you really want this to go? Like, you're really like, this is not something they're signing up for. How far does it have to go before you break in too? Like, where's right. the limit? I eventually got on that side too. Like, just like, no, he burst in at the appropriate time and yeah, got,
he's
and
making a this movie. In the butt. He's yeah. not a, he's not investigating prostitution or anything like that. Right. He's making a movie. Well, I'm not to be glib, but it reminds me of that scene in The Wire where McNulty goes way too far, mm-hmm. allowing a scene to go on with some potential prostitutes. And ultimately has to weasel his way out of trouble for it because he should have stopped it way before that. But they also didn't mm-hmm. have the, my point is, yeah, he's not that. He's not cop investigating crimes. He's making a movie and he has to protect that crew. I haven't not seen the movie. I still think he made the right choice. I have seen that clip.
He got exactly what he wanted out of that too. He got exactly yep. what he needed from that scene. That was one of the things that I thought was an interesting, I don't know. There's not one movie out of this year where you have that kind of question that comes up, where is it your responsibility to change real world events in any way by doing the things that you're doing? And so, but yeah, ultimately I like this, and this is, and this got an Oscar for what's her name?
Maria Bakalova, yeah, that's right.
Well deserved. She's terrific in this. I think it's hard to like just find somebody quote unquote right off the street and tell them here's a movie where you're going to have to act a certain way and you might get in trouble for it. And you can never let in on the fact that this is a joke to the people that you're doing this with and everything. That's got to be tremendously difficult.
Yeah.
Well, even Sacha Baron Cohen, I don't even want to belabor it, but I really enjoyed this movie too. I don't think this type of movie or these types of movies will ever be made again. I think they will be copied, but I don't think anyone will have the commitment that Sacha Baron Cohen has. He had to wake up in character mm-hmm. when he was staying with those truthers
yeah.
and not give away his identity.
Oh,
imagine
God.
That, like before your coffee, before your whatever, before you go pee, you have to say, oh yeah, I'm Borat Sagdiev mm-hmm. to these guys and keep it up for, I think he was there for like a week or something like that. Mm-hmm. That is nearly impossible. I think you have to have somebody with the commitment and the talent that he has to pull that off.
I think this movie for me is working when it is being clever and insightful in scenes like the crisis pregnancy center. In scene, you know, that stuff with the eating the baby from the cake is so smart. It's just so it's working on a clever level and then working on this other subversive level. And I think it's least working for me when it's just cringe, when it's just them, you know, dancing and she's on her period or, you know, whatever the, you know, the cringiest parts of this movie where it's just, I understand there's also some, you know, some layers going on there as well. But it seems to me that the emotion of it is just to make you like, oh, I can't believe they did this. And I even think some of that stuff with the truthers borders into cringe as well. And that's the stuff where I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I'm not on it for this.
I see what you mean.
But the other stuff is, I think, really clever and funny.
Well, he does capture some really, like, one of the best lines in that. That one of the best lines comes from the truthers because they say it in such an unironic fashion. When Borat is sitting there on the computer and he finds these news stories and they're like, no, don't believe that. That's conspiracy theories and stuff like that. Like, these guys are yeah. deeply into QAnon. And so that was one of my favorite parts, you know, but listening to how a movie like this is made, it sounds almost like the way the movie is made is more interesting than the movie itself.
I think it's like Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yeah.
Where you talk about this, waking up in character thing. There was a couple of videos online, one about how when he comes up to sing at that rally, how people in the audience really did find, you know, they really did find out that it was him. That's in the movie. They really did find out that was Borat. But what we didn't see was how close he was to actually getting into a bad incident on that. And it shows him in the trailer just kind of like keeping that door locked and everything. And like, all right, we need to go. And then there's another video online of the cops running into them on a side of the street in Georgia, and them trying to figure out what's going on and everything. And they're like, I think this is a Borat movie. I don't know. Like, they're like, there's a lot of like, really, I think if there was a way to do it, to figure out how to do a making of one of these, I think that would be way more fascinating.
Yeah,
the movie itself.
I agree.
Let's go on. Let's move around to something we've all seen. This is going to be completely random, but let's go to Happiest Season.
Oh, okay.
I fucking hated this movie.
Nice. Wow. Talk about it.
Oh my God. I fucking hated this movie so much. Is it possible to hate Mackenzie Davis? I hated her. I hated her character. How is it possible to hate Mackenzie Davis? And yes, the movie comes in with its like this last minute thing where like, well, just imagine what it was like being in her family all this time. And she had to deny her, you know. Yeah, I get that. But this movie didn't have to happen. The fact that they were having such a good time at the beginning of the movie. I'll just invite you to my parents' place and forget everything about what that entails. And then on the way there, say, oh, by the way, I never told my parents about you. Fuck you. I hate this movie so much.
Oh, did you like Dan Levy at all?
Yeah, but.
He's not enough to save it. Yeah, I talked about this at length in a previous podcast, and I don't really like the story. I don't really like how it wraps up so neatly. There's a lot of fans that think she should have ended up with Aubrey Plaza, and I don't like that either. I think a more realistic thing would either be the family start coming around sooner, or they don't end up together at the end, but to have the family come around at the very end and they end up together at the end, it's a little wish fulfillment-y for me, and maybe that's okay. For the particular people telling the story, many of them are gay, and I certainly don't have any understanding of what that's like, but I agree with you that you didn't, you know, even if it is a real situation for some people in their home to not be able to come out to their parents as early as they would want, the movie didn't need to be made. I agree with you on that front.
I was just upset by that, the whole way they decided to build the foundation for this movie. It would have been a little bit better had the parents been coming to her place, or, you know, something of that, something that changes that a little bit so that Mackenzie Davis isn't constantly having to do this. I don't know whatever her character's doing to try to prevent the fact that prevent the parents from ever figuring it out and everything. So
Have been for years and years, so many heteronormative BS holiday movies that, you know, it's time for a non-heteronormative BS holiday. This is exactly what these movies do. Like, yeah, and mm-hmm. they have been around forever. I didn't hate it as much as Chris. I like these humans, as far as, actors, and I had some fun with them, but I totally agree. So much of it is nonsense, and the ending for me is just terrible. It's just all bows, mm-hmm. all wrapped up pretty for you, and it just loses so much authenticity for me in doing that. Yeah, I'm with you. Maybe not as extreme, but yes, everybody should have their chance to have a BS holiday movie made about their lives. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Along those lines, the movie Uncle Frank deals with the same thing.
It does. Much more authentically, though, I think.
Much more authentically, yes. This has a funeral that brings the family together in this. Paul Bettany having quite the year himself in this. This was definitely a lot more authentic, and I like this a lot better. And there's a more believable reason for him to keep it a secret than there is in Happiest Season.
Especially considering you're dealing with a different era as well, you know?
Yeah.
And a different geological location, you know? Mm-hmm. There are two main reasons why it makes a little more sense in this context.
Yeah. Sophia Lillis is terrific. I think I'm looking forward to seeing her I feel like she's got a real career ahead of her.
Yeah, she does.
She's terrific in this. Stephen Root, he's not in it that much really. But his presence is felt, in Uncle Frank, quite a bit, and he once again proves I don't know if Stephen Root is underrated, but he is certainly one of our best actors that I don't think gets enough credit a lot of times. And his discussion with his son after he discovers this is back in the 40s or whatever, when he discovers his son with his boyfriend in bed is heartbreaking when he tells him off. But then the camera sort of sticks on Stephen Root after Paul, you know, after his character, after his son has left, and it shows how much it hurts him to say the things that he's saying in this and everything. I just thought that was a great scene. Stephen Root's fantastic in this.
I think everybody's really good in this. Steve Zahn in mm-hmm. you know, just kind of in a little role. I mean, he's there throughout the movie, but you know, plays an interesting part. I loved the relationship between Frank and Wally. I thought was really well done. There's also a lot of authenticity here, as opposed to what we were just talking about, in the fact that it doesn't wrap everything up in a bow. Allow everything to be perfect, but it does allow for some growth, some redemption, and some real tragedy as well. This one's going to go under the radar for a lot of people because it's not getting Oscar buzz. It's it's going to be one of those that just kind of gets missed in the shuffle, and that's unfortunate because I think there's some really good stuff here.
Let's talk about. I'm going to go through a string of movies we've all seen here. Let's start with Palm Springs. A tremendous surprise that came out in the summer. Was it on Amazon or Hulu?
Hulu.
It was on Hulu. It took forever for that Groundhog Day premise to become a viable genre for other movies. I think for the longest time, sort of like how Blair Witch Project was, people were like afraid to do this because it's so Groundhog Day that people would just be like, oh, that's Groundhog Day. But people have come up with some really, really good offshoots. In fact, I don't think I've seen a terrible one yet. And there's another one that's on right now. It has Catherine Newton. And what is that movie? Do you know what that movie is, Aaron, that I'm talking about? Catherine Newton.
From Knives Out?
I know there's a bad Jonathan Taylor Thomas Christmas movie like this. It was a TV movie.
No, that's an oxymoron. There are no bad Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
JTT is the world.
The movie is called The Map of Tiny Perfect Things.
That came out.
And it's got that same premise, and it's not like the best or anything, but it's still good. That premise is solid. But Palm Springs, this one hit me by surprise. I was not expecting this to be as good as it was, and Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti, man, God, I love them so much in this, and that's a great pairing, and I love everything about this. Go, let's talk about Palm Springs.
This movie is legitimately great. I don't know how it's great. I know that like you said, the Groundhog Day thing, or time loop thing is a great concept, but even Happy Death Day, which we all, I think, enjoy, mm-hmm. I don't think, and Edge of Tomorrow, which we all love, mm-hmm. I don't think they've come anywhere close to this, because it covers everything. It covers the comedy of it. It covers the hopelessness of it. It covers the relationships, and it covers the physics of it
and the lies, Barrett. It covers the lies.
Yeah, yes. No, yeah. Well, there is a little bit of contrived, you know, romantic thing, but I mean, for having such a crazy small cast of essentially, you know, three main characters, all of whom Aaron and I got to chat with a little bit on one of these fancy things that he does as a critic, and he invited me. So J.K. Simmons is so good in this. J.K. Simmons has not only a great humorous part, a great humorous part, especially mm-hmm. when he says, "You want a party?" And then that shit goes crazy. But he also has the most poignant moment of the movie, I think. And this movie will hit you on a billion different levels. Was not like you, Chris. I was not prepared for how much this tickled my bits.
It's just fun.
You're improving, Barrett. You're improving.
Could have been worse.
I love this movie. It is absolutely one of my favorites of the year. I'm about, you know, Aaron's about to get on his train again, but this movie is about something. Like this, like this movie is about wrestling with what commitment to another person means for your life. And it does it in such a perfect metaphorical way. The idea of marriage being living the same thing over and over with the same person, you know, like that, like it is really a beautiful look at that stuff. And that's always going to tip a movie on the scales for me. So I enjoyed it. I also have, they sent me the Grand Saber beer. I have four beers here from Palm Springs. So next time we're together,
you know, I bet that one shit for each will of taste us, so. Really fresh by then.
It's been through like a hot moving van that's and then an like awesome a cold thing.
Little, that's an awesome gift that they sent you.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool. It's from Mexico.
Yeah. That's all. That's all I got.
The Palm Springs is great. All right. Moving on to Hamilton.
Oh, this shit is weird that it even counts, but I guess it does.
Mm-hmm. We don't have to talk about it much. We've talked a lot about Hamilton. We've all seen the play.
It's great. So good.
Yeah. We've all seen it on stage, and then it came out on Disney+. And we finally got to see the original actors on this.
Yes.
Which is something that I don't think any of us had experienced. So it was an interesting, experience to see that. I was like, a lot of people like to point out the whoever played the king, like they're like, you can see his sweat. It's awesome. You can see his sweat, you know,
the
all that.
Spit. Anyway. It's the spit that's amazing.
The spit.
The trailers. Yes. Right before recording this Sunday, the trailers came out for Lin-Manuel's In the Heights movie. The Crazy Rich Asians director, I forget his name, John something. Oh, he's directing it. That makes me want to see an actual filmed adaptation of Hamilton. Because I think with the right decisions on what to keep and what to excise in making that transition, that movie could be really, really cool. But anyway, yeah, Hamilton's awesome.
John M. Chu is the director.
There you go. Thank you.
The revelation of seeing this on Disney Plus was not only to reignite the excitement that I've only seen this one. Well, no, I guess twice. Yeah, on mm-hmm. stage. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is terrific, obviously, and it's his baby. But the revelations are Leslie Odom Jr., who's also in One Night in Miami, Philippa Sue, and seeing David Diggs in his glory mm-hmm. is something that, God, I mean, it's so good. When you see like perfection, it's just like, God, what can you do, man?
I've seen awesome. Three other people play those roles on stage, and then I saw him, and I was like, oh, they're all only nailing one of the things he does. He's nailing five different things, but each of them is just good at doing one David thing. He is a singular talent, man. That guy's going to the moon. I can't wait to see where he goes.
I do want to mention, you mentioned King George, Jonathan Groff, just because I don't know when I'll get an opportunity to shout it out and recommend it to you guys. If you haven't gotten around to seeing Mindhunter, which Jonathan Groff is in, it's a David Fincher TV show. It is so good, and I can't believe more people don't love this show or love on this show. So anyways, Jonathan Groff reminded me of that.
We can briefly talk about Showbiz Kids. God, who was the director? Alex Winter did mm-hmm. this one.
Good doc.
Very good doc. Yeah, talk about it.
Oh, I only saw it the once. And it made me uncomfortable, much the same way watching parts of that Britney Spears documentary did. And just mm-hmm. the way, that's the amount of pressure that's put on child actors. The one that sticks with me the most is Evan Rachel Wood talking about wanting mm-hmm. to just go play. Yep. And they wouldn't let her go play. They're like, mm-hmm. no, you're an actress now. You have to be serious about this. And that broke my heart. And it's a story that I think is all too common. And it's insightful. I think you should check it out if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Henry Thomas is a revelation in that, too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This sound like an old man. This generation doesn't really realize who Henry Thomas is. But Henry Thomas was the hot shit, man, mm-hmm. in the 80s. And, The fact that he saw it in real time, obviously not as devastating as Evan Rachel Wood, but he saw it in real time where he was like, I'm going in for these roles and I've grown and everything. And they're like, no, we want 12-year-old you. We don't want 16-year-old you with a little wispy mustache.
Yep. Yeah. They want the child version of them, but they want the adult brain from them.
And Mila Jovovich is the same thing, by the way. It's amazing to me that she can tell the stories that she told where it looks like it's not a big deal to her. Mm. But it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. It's a big fucking deal. She's like, yeah, I dropped out. And then I ran away at 16 with this guy. Lived in Paris for a while. Got married. And it's like, hold on. Mm-hmm. On one of those things. We should probably unpack some of this.
Yeah.
But everybody handles it in their own way.
Well, and that's kind of part of the beauty of the doc, right? Is to see how different it can be, even though there's these threads of the same story. Everybody leads different lives, even, these child stars. It really made me be like, this should be like an annual series where they just get a new handful of, because there are so many child stars who have these stories. And we just, we need to know the pain and the trauma that can come from our need for entertainment.
Some of these we don't have to go too much in depth in, but Sonic the Hedgehog was a movie that got a theatrical release and way more fun than you'd expected. But it's also another one of those movies that didn't need to happen because Sonic is as fast as he is. He doesn't need to have a road trip with James Marsden to go to San Francisco and win. He just has to run to San Francisco and go up the building and get the thing and then go.
Jim Carrey's having a blast, and it's been a long time since I've enjoyed him having a blast. Because I think he's often having a blast, but I'm not enjoying what he's doing. But here, I was just as giddy as he was.
And Ben Schwartz. Give Ben Schwartz all the projects. I think he's great.
Yeah, he's great.
Definitely. earlier in the year, The Gentleman, which was Guy Ritchie coming back to his Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels genre and everything. And this is another fun movie, Charlie Hunnam, but Hugh Grant steals this one.
Absolutely.
It was Colin Farrell for me.
Straight. Oh, what? Oh. What?
Colin Farrell stole it for me.
Oh, that's a good one. Colin Farrell, that's a good one.
But I will admit,
Steelers.
Yeah.
This felt a bit like Hangover 3 for me in that I just, like, we're just playing the hits and they're good hits. But, you know, I feel like Lock, Stock and
Snatch.
Snatch are both superior to this movie. But the style and the humor of those two movies is definitely back here.
It's a different narrative, man. It's a different point of view. It's a different storytelling.
It's about criminals and crime gone wrong, people who cuss too much and people who fight and British thugs.
There's a McConaughey. Is he fucking British? No, he ain't.
He doesn't make the movie good by his presence. Have you seen How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days? Don't tell me who's in it. I did not connect to this movie, but I saw the same style and humor of his previous work. I just did not connect to this movie.
Balderdash. This is a whole different thing, especially, and I'll tell you why. It's because of Hugh Grant. He is the little sprout in the engine that throws things off a little bit because of his storytelling device and because of his performance. And God, he is just, talk about, man, chewing some scenery. He's been waiting for this role. Well, I guess after Paddington 2, he probably had a much clearer path of getting this. But he's been waiting for this type of role since like 4 Weddings and a Funeral. He's like, God, I'm sick of playing this already, this charming, like, dope type of thing. I want to play something really juicy. And he nails it. So you're wrong, Jeremy. I love you, but you're wrong.
We have been having a problem in our minivan with engine sprouts. So if you can let me know how to take care of those.
He's the sprout in the engine. That's going to be a thing, Aaron.
I think this movie, for me, sings on its dialogue. I just think this is extremely well-written, fun, like, patter that happens in this. As far as a story structure and was I invested in what was happening, not as much for me, but I really did think the character work and the dialogue work in this was really fun. And it really sings. There's a lot of sparks here. So
yeah.
So it's entertaining.
Let me some Michelle Dockery too.
Sure.
Another movie that got, I guess, a brief theatrical release, The Hunt. This was like right at pandemic.
Sure was.
Week or whatever for most people. A movie that was supposed to come out the previous in 2019. It was supposed to come out in like September or October. And then it got pushed back. And the rumor that it got pushed back was because, this is so upsetting to conservatives and everything that they didn't want to stir the pot or whatever. But then it turns out it wasn't that at all. It was just, I can't even remember what the reason was. It was like, well, they just needed more time or something. I don't know.
You know, it's interesting in hindsight, as we have come through the rest of this year and have literally had people storm the capital of the country based on political beliefs. That we would look at something that got postponed because it portrayed, you know, possibly too much satire. It was too, you know, over the top. And then we come through this year and we go, okay, what was the satire we just lived through? You know what I mean? Like, so I think this movie in hindsight is even more interesting when you go back and watch it, because it speaks to something, and I think the movie does it very well, where it speaks to that human element of tribalism and all that kind of stuff in a way that says this is over the top, but this is where that leans. And this is kind of how that looks. And the movie takes, you know, it's equal time with extremes on that idea. So Yeah, I think this movie becomes more and more interesting the further along we got in this year.
Mm-hmm. It's also hilarious.
Oh, yeah, very funny.
Oh,
yeah.
Betty Gilpin is so good in this. She grounds it with this deadpan humor that you don't typically see even in male macho-led action movies like this. I love it. I love this movie. We got to see this early with Aaron's screening, me and Chris and Aaron, and it was too much fun right before Sin Week.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a movie where I don't think anybody comes off looking superior, really.
No.
I think that when you hear the premise of liberals hunting conservatives, it sounds like, just based on that, it's like this free for all or something like that, that if somebody's getting their fantasies, played out on screen or something like that, it's really not that at all. Yeah, exactly. Betty Gilpin is another. I mean, this is a type of performance that would never get an Oscar nomination, but God, do I want it to get an Oscar nomination.
Sure.
Then we have Yes, God, Yes. That's another one that we've all seen. Go for it.
I think this movie is a caricature.
Yeah.
Like it's not. Yeah. I get it. And it's not the fault of Stranger Things. It's not the fault of homeboy that played in Veep. It's the
for a second there. I honestly do not thought know. You were blaming Stranger Things. Not I thought not Natalia Dyer.
This movie beats you over the fucking head with its stunt cock, and I'm not having it. It's not bad. It's just, come on, we get it.
I don't know, as somebody who has lived through versions of this, you're not wrong that the tone of this is very stark. There's a very stark tone to this movie that's like a little bit satirical, even though the movie itself doesn't fully embrace like the crazy over the topness that it could. And so, yeah, I think that tone disparity, I think I understand what you're saying, but I found it valuable. I found it a valuable kind of exploration of just the what repression is and what it looks like and those kind of things. So I enjoyed it more than you, for sure.
This would be a good triple feature with Saved and Teeth. I don't know where it would go. It would probably go first, and then you have Saved, and then you do Teeth.
Yeah, right. I guess so. And I would rather watch the other things. So like, okay, yeah, we get it. You're exploring your sexuality. Oh yeah, of course. These people that are repressing you, they get the blowjobs and whack off to the porn. And like, is anyone? Okay. You all got it. Except for,
felt like fucking real life to me, man.
Yeah, it did. It did to me too. For the point, and we all grew up in fairly similar. Now you were a preacher's kid, and Aaron, you're a preacher's kid too, right?
Yeah.
So you guys had it more extreme for sure. But I think Chris and I we went to church camp and stuff like that. I even went to like a specialized thing, like these people did, to prove that you were super holy. And I'm still like, yeah, all right, dude. All right. We got it.
Let's go on to First Cow.
No.
Yeah. Now speak about, earlier on I was talking about Nomadland and how it just wasn't my movie. It was slowly paced. Not much going on. Great central performance in this, but man, First Cow. I loved First Cow. I love this movie to pieces, man. I think a lot of times when people brought up Kelly Reichardt, I was like, oh yeah, the director of Old Joy, which is about as slow as it gets. I was like, okay, so that's the type of movie that we're going to see. But man, I love how this begins. I love how it ends, especially. But I just love the fact that there is this friendship that's evolves, and that, you know, it's all about, you know, stealing milk from a rich guy's cow and then making unbelievable desserts out of it. And it's something just tremendously enjoyable to watch. I can't explain it. It's why is this movie to me way more enjoyable than Nomadland?
I think for me, I just wanted to be there. It was so beautiful, and the relationships were so, I love, the Cookie King relationship. And I love those performances, and I just, as slow as it was, which it was, I wanted to be there. So I wasn't in a hurry to get anywhere else.
Cookie King is a lot better than Dairy Queen, by the way.
It takes, honestly, you could do like a whole film festival on 2020 movies about the American dream. You could throw Minari in there, and you could throw First Cow in there quite easily. It's a very, very simplistic version of the American dream. They both have big plans, not a lot of means. But the hope of that future is what keeps them going and what they bond over and become friends. And then that duality of the opening and closing shot, I think, is just really powerful.
Mm-hmm. And ironically, much like Yes, God, Yes, it asks the question, why buy the cow when you get the milk for free? You
know? Hey-o. So,
hey-o.
You've been dying to say that one.
All right. So Aaron has been kicked off of the show. I think I can do that. I'm just going to remove him. Thank you, Aaron, for your
hospitality. It's been nice. It's been good, guys. It's been good.
All right, now we're going to go back to some of the more nitty gritty here, the Oscar contenders and One Night in Miami. Regina King's, is this her debut?
Is this her debut?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Talk about this movie, guys. What did you think of it?
Guys, this is one of my, I love this movie so much. I think Regina King is for certain one to watch. I think she's incredible with these performances. She knows exactly how to put them together in interesting situations and bring out the right angles to that scene with Leslie Odom Jr. Mm-hmm. and Malcolm X. Why am I forgetting his name? The actor.
Kingsley Benadire.
Yeah, Kingsley Benadire. Yeah. Those two together in that scene was some of the most compelling film I saw all year. I just like listening to them talk about what it means to be a person of color, where that responsibility lies. I could have watched that for 5 hours. I loved it.
There's a million things to love about this. You're absolutely right. The fact that they humanize Malcolm X in almost a way that you didn't even see from the Denzel performance. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's charming, he's funny, he's human, but yet he's still faithful. He's still the guy that you think he is. When he goes off to call someone, you're like, oh, is he calling a mistress? Is he calling somebody, you know, untoward or something like that? No, he's calling his wife. He's calling his kids to check in. And that humanizes him. The guy that's playing Ali, Eli Gorey, having spent a lot of time in Louisville and seeing a lot of archival Ali footage, there's a mannerism that he speaks in which I know I'm comparing biopics that even Will Smith didn't get, that the way he pronounces his vowels, that's Southern, but not real. It's West Louisville Southern, and he nails it. He absolutely nails it. What I don't like about this movie is the setting. It's fictionalized, obviously, but it's ridiculous to me to think that he's coming off of knocking out Sonny Liston and he's going to chill in this motel room with three other dudes with ice cream for like, I don't know, 4 hours or whatever it is. Yeah. But get past that. Everything about this is gold.
Yeah. It keeps it. I don't know. I guess that's where they want it to be intimate, right? They don't want it to be one of these sort of sprawling all over the city thing. But when you say One Night in Miami, that's what it seems like, right? It's like they're going to be in Miami hanging out in a whole bunch of places. Not, this is more one night in some motel lodge that you could be in anywhere.
Days in.
Yeah.
It is a weird title. It's the kind of title, if you didn't know anything about it, you might think really wrong ideas about where this movie is going to go. it's still on my list of shame from 2020. I haven't seen it, but it's at the very top of my list.
So. Jeremy, you should watch this just to hear Leslie Odom Jr. sing as Sam Cooke.
It's probably his presence is one of the most exciting things about the movie for me.
It's one night, but there's one flashback where Malcolm X is telling them about a performance that he saw of Sam Cooke in Boston, and it is dynamite. It will give you chills.
I can't wait.
The other thing I wanted to mention about this is it is also based on a stage play. And so, again, the singular location makes sense for that kind of idea. But what I love that Regina did to open it up is each character gets this opening scene that says so much about them that's outside of this moment. And I thought those were really well done, really set the stage for these people as human beings and to spend this time with them. I will also mention Kemp Powers, who wrote this, also directed, was co-director of Soul. So what a year for Kemp Powers.
Man.
I could go on about this one. This is my jam.
Then Da Five Bloods, Spike Lee's movie that came out on Netflix. About a bunch of Vietnam vets who go back to Vietnam to try to find gold that they buried when they were out there and everything. And once again, Delroy Lindo, man, should have been nominated for this movie. This was the performance that everybody in the world was like, oh, he's a shoo-in. He's going to win this thing. That's how good he is. And he doesn't even get nominated.
Yeah. This movie itself didn't really get nominated much. I think it got one nomination for its score. And I think that was it. This movie is so much better than that. Now, there are things about this movie that I could, you know, nitpick and talk about as far as things I didn't like. But man, Bozeman's in this one, too, doing good work. And these guys together are so great to watch. There's a camaraderie here that is so interesting and fun. And Spike Lee is doing something different with a male lead of color that I don't know I've really seen, know, kind of wrestling with what it means to be a quote unquote conservative. Or I mean, he even wears the MAGA hat, right? Like, I mean, so that is definitely part of what's going on here. And I know Delroy talked about how at first he almost didn't take the part because of that part of it. And he and Spike kind of went through that and talked about what it means and where it was going. And I think this movie's doing some really interesting things. And it's just an interesting story, too. It's very Treasure of Sierra Madre. That was definitely intentional. Mm-hmm. But it works, I think.
Yeah. I had a little bit of a problem with the juxtaposition of the treasure hunt and the Vietnam stuff. Yes. I felt like there were two different movies in here that if Spike Lee had decided to go, he could have made two movies. He could have made the Vietnam version of this and then the Treasure Hunter version of this. And they, and they would have been two stellar movies on their own, but put together, I was like, just when you're getting excited about the treasure stuff, and he goes to the Vietnam stuff. And then you get, oh, the Vietnam stuff's pretty interesting. And then we're going back to the treasure stuff.
Yeah.
So like it's a movie that I definitely need to see again, because I think it's one of those, when you have the initial shock of that, it's, you know, it's hard to get through, but when you watch it again, it won't be that big of a deal. So I need to watch that again at some point.
Yeah.
Let me go down to, Never Rarely, Sometimes Always. I know that Jeremy, has touted this movie. Now, I really liked this, but I didn't like it as much as Jeremy, so I'm gonna give you the floor on this one,
which is fair. It's fair to say it did. It is one of those movies that I feel like my frame of mind when I watched it is part of what bonded me to it. I can't get over the guts of this director to cast an unknown musician from Canada who has never acted before in a role where she has to absolutely carry the film and the key scene in the film emotionally. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you know. I'm in awe of that ability to judge talent. I don't know how you know. And maybe mm-hmm. she didn't. Maybe she just got really fucking lucky. But the other gal in this, Talia, I think is her name, she's acted before. She's relatively new to the scene, but she's not an unknown. And, you know, the movie just rests on the main character's facial expressions. And she doesn't make a lot of big ones. They're small. They're very subtle shifts, mm-hmm. Particularly that key scene where the doctor is asking her a series of questions and the answer needs to be never, rarely, sometimes, or always. Mm-hmm. And as the questions get sensitive, you can see just these tiny little micro changes in her facial expression that to me betray a lot of pain and uncertainty. And what's fascinating to me is a movie like Cider House Rules, when that movie came out, it was very hard for me to connect to it because it felt like the movie started with, I'm going to make a movie that tells you why abortions are okay. Mm-hmm. And you could probably make that argument about this movie too. This movie is very definitely dealing with the concept of abortion and how impossible it is for people in some conservative areas to get access to even information, let alone care. She has to go from Pennsylvania to New York City to get this procedure done. I also love how once she does get out of her own area, I love how compassionate the doctors and people she meets are. Because the woman even asking her the questions, because she says, why are you asking me this? Why are you asking if my boyfriend hits me? And she's like, because I want you to be safe. I want to know you're mm-hmm. okay. And so the movie really does contrast that. And I think it's obviously still a hot button issue in the U.S. And I'm not really trying to even tout the movie because it's dealing with abortion. That's how powerful I found the main performance to be and how human I found her to be. And it's just it's a sweet spot for me. I've probably seen it 4 times now.
Seriously.
And each time I'm more amazed. I can't even fathom casting somebody who's never acted and just being confident she's going to nail this shit. And she did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she absolutely did. I don't even know if she wants to act anymore.
Yeah.
anyway, I love it.
No doubt. She's terrific. And I was totally on board liking this as much as you were until after the Never Sometimes Rarely Always scene, where I felt like there was no stakes involved in any of the things that they got into, because this is a harrowing will she be able to even get this done kind of movie. And after that, there's like all these things that the movie throws in as obstacles, but that aren't really, they're just kind of there to make you worry a little bit. And then they're nothing. That was the only thing that knocked this down a little bit, but I agree with you. This is a powerhouse performance from her. And this is a movie that you definitely want to see. It's definitely a really good movie. For sure.
I can totally see why you would say that. I have no beef with that take whatsoever. For me, at the end, what I at least feel like they're trying to go for, and maybe I'm just making excuses, is that it's a 2-day procedure. So she can't even fucking get it done and go home. She has to get it done and find a way to kill 16 hours riding the subway and bowling with the creepy guy. And then they don't have the money to get home. And so I feel like it was at that point, the director was basically saying, even when you can get to care, it's still an ordeal. It's still really, really tough. And, you know, as a man, you know, I feel like I needed this movie in my life to better understand some things.
For sure. I want to talk a little bit now. I think I have about 2 or 3 more like really run down, like really deep movies, and then we'll run down.
All right.
Miss Juneteenth was a movie that Barrett and I got to see over the summer, I believe, and we got
and
to
Aaron.
Talk to the, well, did were you also a part of that
I was. Interview? I was.
I don't even remember you being part of that interview. I'm sorry. Well, I'm kind of a dick.
No, it's fine. It's totally fine.
No. So yeah, all of us got to see that during that time, and we got to talk to Channing Godfrey Peoples, the director of this movie. And this was one of the best experiences we had with a screening and then an interview and everything. This is just a really good movie, and it's about this this beauty contest that centers around the Juneteenth holiday and everything, and it's about a woman who has won in the past and has a daughter who's about that age now, who she wants to go through the contest and everything. And it's really just a slice of life thing with her and her daughter. And it's just, oh, it's so good. It's just another one of these movies with the ending scene is one of my favorite of the year. One of the last shots of the year is great.
Yeah, and it's another one that's likely to go under the radar for a lot of people and just to be missed. And so, yeah, full-throated recommendation, not to let it fly by you if you have a chance to check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one in the Oscars is Another Round, which it got a director nomination.
It sure
did.
Almost
nothing else, which is really strange. Now I was a little hesitant to watch Another Round at first because I thought, oh, this is just going to be another movie about a person dealing with alcoholism, and it's just going to be the same thing that we always see with these movies. It has nothing to do with that, really, although there is alcoholism in the movie. But it's about a bunch of teachers who they've discovered a philosophy that somebody wants to live around. Like, we don't have enough alcohol in us to start the day. Like a 0.05 is a good amount to have. And you can do the things that you're supposed to do at a better level at 0.5 or whatever, or 0.05. And so they do this experiment of teaching their classes while being 0.05 drunk, essentially. Of course, some of them go a little bit too far and everything, but Mads Mikkelsen, man, this guy is so good. He's
incredible in this. This, you talk about great final scenes. This is another yes. one that I'm just like, this is in the running for best final scene of the year. Mm-hmm. I will put it this way. I tasted my first alcohol accidentally on our honeymoon when they accidentally didn't send us they accidentally set us actual champagne. I didn't purposefully drink any alcohol till probably within the last few years, and tried wine, some different things. But my relationship to alcohol has been, I don't get it. I don't understand why that's something that people enjoy, people would want to do. There's a bitterness to the taste. Like, what is this? Mm-hmm. This movie, for the first time in my life, made me understand why people like alcohol. Like, mm-hmm. what it is about it that is joyful, interesting, adds something to their life. Does mean all of a sudden we have alcohol in our house? No, but it does help me, this movie covers the idea of alcohol in every aspect. And I'd never seen that in a movie, before. Mm-hmm. I'd seen the crazy rambunctious drunkenness of it. That's in a bunch of movies. I'd seen the danger of it of alcoholism, like you mentioned, and what if it controls your life and addiction and those kind of things. I had never seen just the more idea of that alcohol is this thing that at a low level takes an edge off of, whatever experience. I don't even know how to explain it other than when I watched this movie, I was like, oh, I see. I get it. And I think that's pretty cool. It's a pretty amazing thing to do in a movie. So I would highly recommend Another Round.
Another Round is really, really good. I was a little bit thrown off by the title and a little bit of the whatever description of it. Then mm-hmm. I watched it and I really loved this. I'm surprised it only got two nominations and one was director out of all.
It's such a weird director nom, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're going to start the rundown and then we're going to vote.
All right.
I talked about my octopus teacher on the last podcast. Definitely go see that movie. It's on Netflix. It is incredible. Great documentary. You must watch it. You've never seen anything like it. Greyhound, which was released on Apple Plus. Tom Hanks, battleship
submarine, a bunch of battleships through the part of the ocean where they couldn't be covered by air support.
Yes, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say it's actually my favorite Tom Hanks performance of the year, even though most people are talking about News of the World.
Mine too, and Greyhound is really, really good, and it was probably my number one movie for a while until like the deluge of movies that came out. Eurovision Song Contest.
Can I just say, just to make this quick, I don't know if I'm the only one that really liked this movie. I really enjoyed I think this is going to be one of those that people look back on and go, how did we all not think this was the funniest movie? Like, I just think people are maybe a little tired of Will Ferrell. But man, this movie's really funny. Really funny.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It reaffirmed my love of Rachel McAdams is what it is.
Yes,
did.
That too.
Bad Education, which was an HBO movie, Hugh Jackman, Allison Janney, about trying to inflate scores to get money and then stealing the money out of the school's whatever budget and everything to live extravagant lifestyles. Anything else that we need to say about Bad Education? We've talked about it quite a bit.
Jeremy, you were the one that wanted to talk about this one. Was there something?
I just thought it needed to be on the list. Is all. Yeah. There are really good performances here. I still think it would be better as a limited series than a film to give us more time. But everyone's fantastic in this movie, acting wise, and it's well worth the watch.
Yeah. Kajillionaire, which Barrett may have accurately said was one of the weirdest movies he's ever seen.
Sure is,
Evan,
man.
Rachel Wood is great in it, though, even though she's part of that weirdness. Maybe most part of that weirdness, actually, because her performance is so unique and so something that you haven't seen, really. That's a sad and then funny and then sad. It pulls you in all sorts of directions.
Nice to see Deborah Winger again.
Yeah, ooh. Definitely. Yeah, Deborah Winger. And of course, I mean, Richard Jenkins is always great. The King of Staten Island, Judd Apatow's movie that came out, I guess it was mainly on VOD.
I unexpectedly kind of love this movie.
Oh yeah.
It's very Judd Apatow, and it's too long, and it's two different movies, and the whole drug dealer friend thing storyline didn't even need to be in there for this movie to be poignant. But Bill Burr is great, Marissa Tomei is great, and I finally understand why people like Pete Davidson. Never ever got it before. I'm not even kidding. It is kind of funny, but I'm not even kidding.
Sure.
He never made me laugh on Saturday Night Live. I never got his humor. I never got his perspective until this movie. And he shows range, and his humor, especially when he's playing off of Bill Burr, is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's Freaky. Christopher Landon, another fun horror movie from him, brutally violent, but it's also somehow funny at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Catherine Newton, she's going places, man. She's in a lot of stuff. She's going to be in a lot of stuff, by the time she's 30. I think she's already on the way of having 100 credits on her IMDb by the time she's like 30 to mid 30s, unless she takes a break somewhere.
And this movie has my favorite cinematic kiss of the year, bar none.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Baccarat, which is a movie that comes out of left field. It starts off, I actually didn't know anything about this movie coming in to watch it. I thought it was going to be your typical like City of God type of drama or whatever, but it's another The Hunt, basically. It's down in Brazil, and it's got a different conspiratorial nature to it, and it's a fun movie. I liked it.
It's weird.
It's weird.
It kind of came out of nowhere. It had one of those moments on Letterboxd where everybody's like, you got to see it. And so I think it got a little buzz.
An American Pickle. Seth Rogen plays two different roles in that. That movie's not good, but it has some funny moments.
It's got some moments, right? It really does. It's got
some great moments in it. The part that I always keeps going through my mind is how the scientist tells all the people like how he was able to be in this pickle brine for 100 years, and then the movie immediately goes to narration, and it's like, the scientist, what he said was good, and nobody questioned it.
And completely covered everything, and nobody questioned it ever again.
So good. Enola Holmes. Millie Bobby Brown's another one that's just going to be a dynamo. At some point, she is a great actress. And then this movie, she's so charming in it. Enola Holmes is entirely rides on her performance, and she is just fantastic in it. So if you haven't seen Enola Holmes is great. I mentioned I put on this list The Rental mainly because we got to interview Sheila Vand when we did this. I thought The Rental was pretty good independent horror movie. Dave Franco directed, has Alison Brie in it as well. It's a typical horror movie, but I thought it was pretty good. Small Axe, Mangrove. Now there's five different Small Axes on Amazon. This is the first one, and God, this is a great one. This is great.
This is this is the primary example of earlier when I was saying Trial of Chicago 7 just kind of got a little shallower over the year. This was one I watched and went, oh, like, you know, there's,
I was about it's to doing, say,
yeah.
I was about to say, like, this movie, like, sort of just trounces that movie to me. I love this. I don't know. It's something you guys should watch if you haven't heard of the Small Axe series. It's five movies from Steve McQueen, all covering different racial injustices and everything. Hashtag Alive. We talked about this on the last podcast. Korean zombie movie. Very well done. Very fun. The Painter and the Thief, documentary about a painter who makes two great paintings that get sold and then get stolen. And then at the trial, she starts talking to one of the thieves of those paintings and develops a friendship with this person. And this person has a lot of different problems. He's got a drug addiction. Just a lot of these kind of issues, and she has her own problems and everything. Interesting movie. You would never think a painter would go and seek out their thief and develop a relationship and paint them and stuff. So
this is a huge recommend. In the scene where she presents the painting she's done of him to him for the first time is the most human emotion I saw in a film this year. It's spectacular. That it's worth it for that scene alone to seek this out. Great documentary.
Dick Johnson Is Dead, about a woman who follows her father around, and she knows that he's going to die soon. So she keeps putting him in these scenarios that are fake, where he dies on screen, and they're all like these, you know, he trips and falls and goes down a stairway, and he, you know, like different things like that. I'm not sure if I like this one too much. I thought it was okay.
It's interesting. You know, she's definitely dealing with grief and loss and the idea of, can you prepare for grief and loss? It also has a very interesting ending, depending on, you know, how much you kind of predict what's going on may impact you differently. But yeah.
Right. Run, which is Sarah Paulson. And the girl that plays her daughter is sort of a newcomer. I can't remember the name. But Run is I don't know if is it a spoiler to say that Sarah Paulson is keeping her daughter
as the movie is presented. Yes, but also it's been a while, and people probably, if they know of this movie, you know that about it.
Yeah, it's so another movie where people are being held in a place yeah. without against their will.
Kiera Allen is the girl's name, and she is a wheelchair user in mm-hmm. real life and in this movie. So, mm-hmm.
yes. yeah, and it was pretty good. I would actually recommend watching this. Boy State, which was a great documentary about Texas kids going to compete. As Republicans and Democrats in a big, huge, conference. It's kind of like some sort.
Yeah, politics camp in some
politics
ways.
Camp. Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good, that's a big recommend for sure. The Old Guard, which is the Charlize Theron action movie that came on Netflix. I wasn't a big fan of this either.
The next one's Extraction. I think those two kind of go together for me. It's Netflix trying to do big budget stuff, and it was an interesting year to see them kind of take a shot at that.
Yeah, yeah. I think The Old Guard is better than Extraction, but yeah.
They're both better than Six Underground.
They are.
There was that one, too.
Possessor, which is it's an interesting movie for a while for me. Possessor is This has Andrea Riseborough as a killer who gets into other people's bodies to make a killing look like something that's it's not an assassination. It's somebody who's actually involved with a family or involved with a or sometimes they're random people, whatever. And I liked it to a point, and then I think it started to go downhill for me mm-hmm. once there was, I don't really want to get too deep into it, but it started going downhill for me. I thought it was okay.
This is a movie I need Barrett to see. I think this is right up your alley in a lot of ways, but you may have that same experience of the movie kind of falling apart a little bit towards the end, but the concept I think you'll really dig.
The Wolf of Snow Hollow, that movie's pretty nutty. The guy who directed it is the guy who's the star in it. I can't remember his name right off the bat, but his performance is unhinged and weird. And it's the only thing you're going to be able to concentrate on through this whole thing. But this is a wolf movie. There's a werewolf movie, he is the one who's like, there's no such fucking thing as werewolves. I know that I'm right. And stop saying there's werewolves. and so everybody's running along with this story that there's werewolves going on.
This was a Josh Childs recommendation. He's a big fan of Jim Cummings, the guy who did this. So he recommended it to me. I checked it out. It's very independent. Although Robert Forster's in this, Ricky Lindholm, yep. Jimmy Tatro, some of the names you might know. And it's really quirky. So if you can get on board with the quirk, you may have a really good time. It's interesting. It's definitely interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Bill and Ted Face the Music. I hated this. I didn't think it was good at all.
And it was got weirdly positive reviews too. And then it mm-hmm. just ended up being a lot of nothing, really.
I still see people like multiple times a day saying thank you to them for making a movie we desperately needed during the pandemic. And I think there may just be some mix of nostalgia with pandemic stress that for some people this paid off. I haven't seen it, but I doubt I would enjoy it. I think those first two movies are hot garbage.
I mean, it's exactly what we've had to deal with movies that have a 30 year gap between the last time the movies came out. And, the movies just aren't the same. Our society is not the same. And then they should have just focused on their daughters. The daughters were the best part of this, this movie.
I agree.
Samara Weaving was great in this, and they should have just kept it with that and then have them play cameos or something. They could have still kept the Bill and Ted name. They just, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't like this at all. I'm Thinking of Ending Things, Charlie Kaufman's movie that I don't think anybody understood.
I love this movie. This movie has stayed with me. Yeah, that's why I wanted to talk about it. I think, and maybe it's also that I just recently watched Oklahoma, and there's so much about this movie that is really kind of based in that character whose soliloquy he gives at the end and sings. Mm-hmm. And I just found, once I connected to the idea of this as a man who tried to write his own fantasy of what his life was like. I connected to it differently and thought it worked, but but it's weird, man. Is it Charlie Kaufman weird?
Yeah, sure. Man. I did not connect to this. And now three more, and then we vote. Greenland. These are all you, Aaron. No, nobody has seen these. Greenland.
These are my. I really want to hear your all opinions on these, so I'm going to mention them to you, all stars. Greenland is it's like a throwback to old school disaster movie that I wasn't expecting to like, and at the end of the day, just kind of enjoyed. And I'm really curious if I'm crazy. And so I want more people to watch it and let me know. But I've heard some other positive response to it, so I think you guys might like it. Relic is the horror movie of the year. That for me as a non-horror fan really nailed me. I was out on this movie for 70% at least of this movie. And then the way it handled its metaphor about dementia at the end just sucked me right in. And then it was a totally different movie for me. So I just thought I'd mention it. Relic is the name of that one. And then Let Them All Talk is probably one of the most Oscar baity movies that Netflix put out this year that got absolutely no Oscar attention. But I think this one might sneak up on one of you guys. Like, you may just catch it someday and just be like, oh, this is like a really interesting, slow paced, fun story of a group of older female friends taking a cruise. Like, and they're all great performances and they're really interesting characters. So this is one I can see later in the year sneaking up on you guys, like, and just being like, oh, how did we never, watch this one? So I wanted to mention it to you. But that's Meryl Streep and Diane Wiest. And
hey, these kind of recommendations in the past have turned out to be things like Blind Spotting. So
that's true. Lightly. Well, but this year, a lot of those we actually covered because Chris went through like a lot of that list this year, which I really appreciated to hear his thoughts on all those. So, yeah.
Cool.
All right, so it's time to vote, and what's going to be our SinCast?
Got my predictions
movie of
ready.
The year. I'll go ahead and start, guys. My favorite movie of 2020 was Palm Springs.
That's a good choice. That's definitely a good choice.
I am 0-1.
Mine's Freaky.
Really? Are you serious?
No.
Okay.
I tell you what, the one that I'm going to watch the most, I know, is The Trial of the Chicago 7. I'm going to watch that shit over and over and over. I've already seen it three times. Probably the only movie from this year that I've seen three times. But first of all, it doesn't have a chance to win. So I'm going to go with my second choice. Which was very, very
No. This freaks
out how this works.
Trial of Chicago 7 is your choice, and then we'll go to the second choice if we have.
We'll figure it out.
So. All right, it's
the mine. Doesn't have a chance to win either. And I'll tell you right now, I don't think any of our first choices have a chance to win.
Mm-hmm. All right, maybe. Go ahead.
I don't know.
Maybe Dicer.
This may surprise some people. I'm going with One Night in Miami. I think that is my favorite movie of the year. So nice. Nice.
I got 3 out of 4, but one was me. And I'm going Never Rarely, Sometimes Always. No one is surprised by that.
Okay.
And now the second place votes will make all the difference.
What an interesting year.
They may. Yeah. I don't know. I think the second place vote may not decide it.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
God, my second place one is going to be... Actually, we've done this so many times now that I wasn't expecting to get to a second second movie. Jesus.
Do you want to go in reverse order as we pick the first round?
Okay, sure.
Jeremy, that means you go first.
That just fucks everything up, dick. Minari.
Oh. Okay. Soul. My number two.
My second one is Promising Young Woman.
Nice.
So we're naming all of the movies.
Is anybody keeping up with
these? I'm keeping up with these. Yes.
Okay. I think my Jesus. I'm trying to remember what I gave Aaron that one time when he asked for my top five.
I can look that up if you want.
Look that up. That was and tell me what I had as my second.
I will look that up, but that was a while ago.
Freaky.
I think it was Freaky.
It's Freaky.
I think you're Freaky, and I like you a lot. There's like three that I could put in there, and it's none of what you guys have said. So,
the further we go, though, we almost guarantee that the fans are going to hate what we settle on. This is going to be a When Harry Met Sally all over again.
It might be.
You said for your number two in the list that you sent me, you had Soul at number two.
I had Soul at two. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all right. Well, that's two votes, two second
that place. Soul wins, Soul. Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of, it does.
Yeah.
Based on that.
There it is.
I don't know.
You can change your vote, Chris, if you want. That was a long time ago.
We didn't assign numbers to them.
I feel like I should go Minari number two.
That's what you had at number three. So
I'm going to go with Minari on two, and I think Minari wins based on yes. that.
Yes. Yay.
So yeah, Minari. I think that's a great choice. I just don't think it's anything that anybody would expect to be.
I think it works
out of this, yeah. But it definitely works for sure.
I think it works. We all liked it. Mm-hmm. Nobody's like, fuck my moving. I hate Minari. So, you know,
right,
it's not
right,
a When
right,
Harry
right.
Met Sally.
Yeah, it is not that. So, yeah, so Minari is our 2020.
Yay!
Well, that was a long podcast. We'll just go right into the end of this. Thanks, Aaron, for coming on and
no problem,
giving us your opinions and knowledge and things and appreciate it very much. It makes our show so much better.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. Keep going to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter, Discord, and SoundCloud. If you want to get on Discord, go to Facebook and private message me, and I'll give you a link there. That's going to do it for this podcast. It's Chris Atkinson, Barrett Scher, Jeremy Scott, and Aaron Dicer. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
I don't know. None of us have seen it. I think it's on Netflix. I just never got around to
it. No, I'm just thinking about the general premise of it.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't know since I don't study on what stuff is about. But
oh, it's Dylan O'Brien. It's the one, Chris, that one of the directors was talking about. Oh, no, Kevin was talking about. It's the Zombieland knockoff.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
How is that Oscar nominated?
Visual effects. Got a visual
was
effects.
Was Zombieland Oscar nominated for visual effects?
I mean, I don't remember, but I don't think so. That's a guarantee. That is an absolute guarantee. That is.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that.
Just from the sheer fact that. Just from the sheer fact.
I started this off on the wrong foot.
Just from the sheer fact that there are so many people who have said, like, I always hear your voice when I'm watching movies. That alone would tell you that.
Yeah, you know. they play the ding noise when they're done. Like, it's like, it's a whole thing.
They have a bell.
Ding. Yeah, sometimes they reverse a sin. It's pretty
sometimes.
Awesome.
Sometimes.
What'd you say, reverse a sin?
Yeah.
Sick!
Yep, Yeah, it's the sound it makes.
Do you ever get annoyed when it's like your fourth time of the day and somebody's masturbating about you?
Trying to work here.
I feel like Matthew McConaughey in Wolf of Wall Street. You jerk off. You know, 2-3 times a week. Now you got to jack that up to twice a day.
Speaking of McConaughey, I was watching Contact just before we got on.
Nice.
And there's a part in there. I don't think we send this. But there's a part in there. It's so silly that I feel like we had to have done it. But like when John Hurt makes his first real appearance in that movie, and he shows Airway all the, you know, he's like, he's like, I found the 3D drawing or whatever. And so it's like these three drawings that apparently a whole bunch of really smart fucking people have been looking
at. Thinking like a vegan.
and there's like a thing that's common to every one of them that ends up being the thing that he puts together to make it 3D and everything. And I'm like, they put the thing together to make it 3D. And she's like, of course. And I'm like, yeah.
Well, you see how like he puts all the different pages together and everything. It's like, they don't line up into a circle. And it's like, they're not thinking like a vegan. And then he does that whole thing. And you're like, dude, not only should you be thinking three-dimensionally, you should be thinking four-dimensionally at this point. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, the whole thing is written so that John Hurt can have an appearance, and I understand that, but, like, God, it's so simple. It's so ridiculous. There's, like the smartest people in the world are looking at this.
I tell you what, McConaughey is terrible in that movie. He's terrible in that movie. Yeah. He's like, Ellie. I'm a man of the cloth.
Without the cloth.
I can't in good conscience let anyone go up there who doesn't believe in God.
That's the part that like hurts the most watching that movie. This is that whole thing.
I don't know, man. Feels like how it would happen.
And no, that's the thing about Contact is that everything in that movie would happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely everything.
It's just hearing McConaughey go through all that nonsense when he's like, he's a little bit smarter than the average bear, you know?
Carl Sagan may have been a mutant, man, or like an alien himself. It's like he predicted and just like Neil deGrasse Tyson is a genius, obviously. But I think Sagan was even like, pardon the pun, light years ahead of him.
The more I hear about Neil deGrasse Tyson, the more it feels like he is one of the best like TV ready scientists.
Yeah.
Whereas there are a lot of other scientists who are far beyond what he is.
He's I don't know about his, you know, total intelligence level, but what his strength is taking really complex concepts and explaining them in entertaining, simple ways. That's what I think you mean by TV ready, right? He's the guy who can write a book like whatever it's called, The Galaxy for Morons or whatever he called it.
For people with no time.
And that's what I appreciate most about him is that, and I think Bill Nye is very much the same way. There's an uber intelligence there that impresses me, but then the way they can break it down and just explain it to me, like, I'm never going to forget that Neil deGrasse Tyson show where he told me, told all of us, well, Chris, you were there, that if you shrunk the world down to the size of a cue ball, it would be smoother than a cue ball.
Mm.
Yeah. I lost sleep over that. It just seems like, you know, mountains are so fucking tall. And,
right.
And how is that possible? I don't trust cue balls anymore either.
Yeah.
Don't trust them.
Yeah. Oh, there's going to be something in those crevices I can't see or feel, man. Hey, get out of my boat.
I'm looking at the ocean right now, so I've got the maritime analogies going.
That's good. That's good.
Sit down. You're rocking the boat.
I do believe that 95% of all songs I ever wrote had water imagery in the lyrics. It was sort of an obsession of mine. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Even you may have noticed even one of my books has heavy water imagery.
What, the second one?
The third one? Currents. Yeah, that's the one where he keeps dreaming and he's in a river.
Yes, obviously. But the second one, Strings, has the one where they're in Lake Michigan, right?
I don't know.
Have to be teleported out?
I wrote it. I didn't memorize it. Yes, they are underwater. Yes, you're absolutely right. At the aquarium, I just caught up.
Doesn't Emmeline like zap them out of the water or whatever?
I just caught up. You're right.
so yes, because there's that one thing. That's what he, you know. That's an obsession with water.
I thought that's what he was talking about. I don't know.
When's the most recent time any of you watched Guys and Dolls? Recently?
I've never seen it.
I just watched it for the first time.
Oh, my God.
I just watched it for the first time.
Did you carve out half a day?
I mean, those movies are long, but, you know, the Brando singing thing was interesting enough to me. But that movie is like, man, there's a level of double entendre in that movie I was not ready for. Whole Kitty Cat song, and like, I was just like, whoa, okay, yeah. I see what we're doing here. Like, it's like Pet Me Papa or whatever that song is.
It's horny.
Like, it's very horny.
But the horniest one is, how do you solve a problem like Maria?
Sure, Sound of Music. Yep, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It's Guys and Dolls, it's not Guys and Guys.
What is it in Batman Forever? Jim Carrey's talking to Tommy Lee Jones, and he's like, I want to kill him. And Jim Carrey's like, if you kill him, he won't learn nothing.
What a pull. What a pull. Aaron's watching Guys and Dolls, and Barrett is watching Batman Forever.
I tell you what, I could have gone on for 2 more hours about Promising Young Woman.
Me too, man. Let's do it now. Let's do it now. Let's talk more about Promising Young Woman. What did you think about the ending?
The ending was taking flack, and I love how they set up that ending. So it's Emerald Fennell or Fennell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She set up that ending by setting up that visit with Alfred Molina's character so perfectly. And you're not expecting that at all, because you see the Connie Britton character and you're like, that's how things are. Yeah. And then this movie is all about sweeping your legs out from under you at every turn, especially at the end. There's no way that ending is going to happen. And yet here we are. And yet it's still a happy ending.
So it's taking some flack for the ending, and it's an interesting thing that I wouldn't have thought of from my perspective, but I'm glad to hear others' perspective on it, especially from people of color who watch the movie and see the ending of, oh, the police are here to make it all right, and just going, really? Because oftentimes the police go with the patriarchy.
Look,
the police go with the...
You mentioned Get Out, you know, man. It's the same thing with Get Out. Like, oh, the police are... Oh, shit. but because...
Except for this movie doesn't do the second part of that. This movie makes it seem like that's the happy ending, right? Like that everything's going to be okay now. So, and I wouldn't have thought of that. I don't know that impacted my experience, but I was really interested to hear other people talk about it and, you know, how that impacted... How they felt about
I do understand that, because I think that's why that Alfred Molina part is so important, is to justify that. And from what I see from the director's tweets, Emerald Fennell Fennell. She is absolutely just giddy about
she's having so much
any
fun,
of
man.
Any of these nominations. Yeah. Is she nominated for director?
She is.
I mean, God bless her. She has made just a crazy, crazy good film. Anyway.
Yeah.
You guys are dicks. All right.
Give us back Terrence and Philip, and we'll give you something to cry about.
A boot. This is about diplomacy.
But so did you hear the three kids that she has with Gavin Rossdale?
No. So she's got
that. So that's when I cut out, and you guys were all looking amused, and I was like, yeah, these names are weird, right?
Yeah!
So you had Kingston Rossdale, Zuma Nesta Rock Rossdale, and Apollo Bowie Flynn Rossdale.
What are the ones that people are going to be like, how did you not talk about?
Yeah.
There'll always be those. Really, I don't think there will be many this time, though.
No, I don't think so.
Unless all the downhill fans come out of the woodwork.
Oh, yeah, downhill.